wide desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's prolific time zones. We cover them all with this program called Coast to Coast AM Weekend Edition. I'm Art Bell. Hi. Well, we've got a lot to do tonight. Lots to do tonight. Sean David Morton, second hour. In a moment, Whitley Strieber, for a very good reason. I hope you all sit down, turn the volume on the radio up, turn the damn TV off, whatever else you're doing. Take a few minutes out to listen to what's coming, those of you that care. Let's cover a little of, the not-so-important on my webcam tonight. I've got a picture of myself along with Comet. Now, some of you may remember Comet. He's our orange tabby who was wild and crazy, and I mean really feral wild, wild beyond your wildest dreams. So wild we had to keep him in the bathroom for 6 months. He lived there after he bit me a couple of times. Anyway, over the years, he came from this starved, brain-damaged little wraith to now a very plump, happy, still brain damaged, but wonderful cat. That's Comet in the photo. So there you are. Otherwise, in the Bell household, all is right with my beautiful wife, Ramona, all the furry friends. The antenna, I'm engaging now in doubling the size of my antenna, the beginnings of that project, and so we've got all the materials for that. And we are ready to go. So that's what's going on around the Bell household. It's going to be a monster antenna, about a half mile long, actually. About a half mile of wire up there. Couple of headlines. One headline, really. And I wonder if, could I be the only one puzzled by this? 6 U.S.-bound flights from England, Scotland, and France were canceled Saturday because of security concerns. The U.S. government said it had fresh indications of Al-Qaeda's continued interest in targeting commercial planes flying to the U.S. British Airways grounded the same flight scheduled Sunday and Monday from London's Heathrow Airport to Dulles International Airport outside Washington, as well as the return flights, by the way. Also canceled a flight from London to Miami on Sunday. In addition, Continental said it canceled Flight 17 for Sunday from Glasgow, Scotland to Los Angeles with a intermediate stop in Newark, New Jersey. Now, this, of course, is several weeks of canceling flights now. Now, they did it that, as well during the holidays, and I really am truly puzzled by this tactic. I don't get it. Now, call me naive, but if they honestly believe there's a problem with these flights, why wouldn't you gather them together and then go through the passengers like a fine-tooth comb? If you have the names of the people, certainly go and arrest them. But this continued cancellation of flights, to me, is puzzling. If you have intel, then use it. If you just have a very, if it's so vague that there wouldn't be anybody you can arrest or investigate or anything like that. Maybe they are. Maybe they're canceling the flights and then investigating the people. I don't know, but there's never anything about that. Just canceled flights, and I'm puzzled by the tactic, even though I guess I understand. But I'm still puzzled. And if you think I'm puzzled by that, here it comes. Last week, about an hour before airtime, this story began to break. This monster of a world, I mean, it's a world-shaking story. It's that big. And let me read you a little bit, just a little bit of this one, just enough. The headline is, "A global warming will plunge Britain into new ice age within decades. Britain is likely to be plunged into an ice age within our lifetime by global warming, new research suggests." A study, which is being taken seriously by top government scientists, has uncovered a change, quote here, of remarkable amplitude in the circulation of the waters of the North Atlantic. Similar events in prehistory are known to have caused sudden flips of the climate, bringing ice ages to northern Europe within a few decades. The development described as, quote, listen carefully, the largest and most dramatic oceanic change ever measured in the era of modern instruments, by the U.S. Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, which led the research, threatens to, listen carefully, is an important part, threatens to turn off the Gulf Stream, which keeps Europe's weather mild. If that happens, Britain and Northern Europe are expected to switch abruptly to the climate of Labrador, which is on the same latitude. Check your globe. Bringing a nightmare scenario where farmland turns to tundra, winter temperatures drop below minus 20 degrees centigrade. Much heralded cold snap predicted for the coming week would seem balmy by comparison. A report by the International Biosphere Program in Sweden, launched by Nobel Prize professor Paul Crutzen and other top scientists, warned last week that pollution threatened to trigger changes with catastrophic consequences like these. Just continuing a little more in the article, and you can, it's on the website, you can read the rest for yourself. Scientists have long expected that global warming could, paradoxically, cause a devastating cooling in Europe by disrupting the Gulf Stream, which brings as much heat to Britain in winter as the sun does. The U.S. Academy of Sciences has even described such abrupt, dramatic changes as, quote, likely, end quote. But until now, it has been thought this would be at least a century away. The new research by scientists at the Center for Environment, Fisheries, and Agriculture Science and Canada's Bedford Institute of Oceanography, as well as Woods Hole, all of them very respected, indicate that this may already be beginning to happen. In other words, it may already be underway right now. Well, I just flipped last week. There's more to the story. For heaven's sakes, I've got it back on the website. Go up and read it, please. This is a monster story. I got an email because I began to wonder, with all of you, how the U.S. press, the large networks and such, would react to such as a story of this magnitude. Well, I got an email from, I'll withhold her name, she gives it to me, who says, listen, Art, I can't promise that this will come to pass, but I'll try my damnedest to do this story for CBS News Sunday morning, where I'm a producer. Well, it did not come to pass, but I certainly appreciate the effort. There were indications, some indications anyway, that somebody was paying attention because Fortune magazine came out with their own article called Climate Collapse. The Pentagon's weather nightmare. The Pentagon's weather nightmare. You might want to read that. That also is on the website. And then, of course, last week I read to you, as I will do now quickly, just a little piece from Whitley's book and my book, The Coming Global Superstorm, reading from the inside cover of the book, What Will Trigger It? Global warming is about to cause the North Atlantic Current, which pumps warm water into the Arctic, to suddenly drop to a more southerly route. This will cause an explosive change in climate, spawning a massive storm as cold Arctic air is freed to pour south, clashing with overheated air in temperate zones. Well, that's, of course, exactly or pretty precisely what's occurring right now. And so here to talk about it, logically so, in a moment, is Whitley Strieber, author of Communion and so much more, including, of course, co-authoring the Coming Global Superstorm. He's a host of a program called Dreamland. And, of course, he bumped into this article shortly after I did. And we'll find out what his reaction was like when he saw this article in a moment. Whitley Strieber. I must say that a story of this proportion, where Europe will freeze, the world will change, much more will happen than you have been told, by the way, and Whitley's about to tell you a lot more about it, specifically the effect on the U.S. I'm astounded that there are time for scandals on the evening news, there's time for politics, oh God, lots of time for politics, but I mean something of this magnitude, something this earth-shaking, this something is something that will affect us all it's almost beyond a reasonable discussion to talk about how much impact this will have, and not a word on the evening news, not a word. Whitley, welcome to the program.
Well, it's good to be back, Art. You're right. Not a word on the evening news. There was an article in Fortune magazine,
yes,
that talked about the Pentagon report about this and a few other things.
But before we get to that, though, I don't know when did you become aware of this article? It must have been very quickly.
I got an email from one of the scientists at Woods Hole.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, right at the beginning, just as the report was being published, and it was a sort of a heads up. And I went to their website and began looking at it, and I realized, oh, my God. then it was quickly picked up by the British press, by the Independent specifically, and that was where we began to follow the story on Unknown Country.
Whitley, after reading this book, as you read the full article in the Independent, to me, I'll tell you, it stood the hair on the back of my neck straight up. It really,
you know, Art,
I read that and I said, oh my God.
In Superstorm, we have memos and a few little news stories from the future and so forth. The article from the Independent could have been part of our book.
Yeah, I know.
It is, and what's so shocking is it's 2004, not like 2025, which is what we sort of thought maybe we'd be kind of beginning to worry about this then. And this is so out of hand.
Well,
right now,
I don't know. Maybe it's so big the networks don't know how to handle it. Maybe they don't know how to handle it, Whitley. It's that big. How can they not be?
There's a resistance to talking about these issues. The environment is a dirty word. It's a liberal plot.
I guess.
It has nothing to do with anything with politics,
but that's
ideology,
yeah,
at all.
But you know what, Whitley? When Art and Whitley write a book, fine, ignore it. You know,
right.
That's easily understandable. But on the other hand, when Woods Hole and people like that are saying, not only is it coming, but it may already have begun. That's what they said in the article. May have already started. It has started.
Yeah. Oh, it has started because, and you know, we're seeing the consequences of it right now, because right now in Australia, there have been, just in the past week, there have been incredible, violent storms. And we are seeing various things happen in connection with this extremely cold weather in the eastern half of the United States.
Well, yeah, it's like a rattlesnake rattling. It's and who's
beginning
listening?
To rattle, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Who's listening? I'm not sure who's listening.
Well, the scary thing is that because of the fact that the European press is what's most interested in this, and most concerned about it, Americans don't realize that we're going to take the major hit, actually.
Well, in the first story, Whitley, as you know, there's all kinds of dire reference to Europe and elsewhere, but they barely mention the United States. I think something about the west or the southwest going into drought, but not beyond that. Now, what kind of consequences should this occur? Would there be for the Americans, say, northeast?
Well, first of all, the consequences to the American northeast, this is going to be one of the first areas to feel it. And they've already started. They started last summer. I knew last summer, and I reported this on my website. We began to feature news articles that explained it on our website last July, when suddenly the onshore waters all the way down into central Florida.
They got cold.
Got cold.
Very cold.
The reason was,
I had swimmers calling saying, oh my God,
what is going on?
It was like stepping into ice, they said.
Right. That the Gulf Stream, as it weakens, it will go farther and farther out to sea. Because it, in effect, is getting shorter in the long loop that presses up against the continental shelf. Gets tighter, and that pulls it all out to sea, and that's what happened, and that's why the cold water was coming all the way down from Labrador, and I thought, oh my goodness, this water is seeping down the continental shelf so far, because the Gulf Stream, which we watch, we have an area on our website that you can click on called the Quick Watch, and it gives you a quick reading of climate change flashpoints and a rating as to how close we are at any given time.
All right, what can you tell me, for example, about the American Northeast? Let's just take that as an example.
Okay, well, that was when it began in the American Northeast. Now, this winter, the extraordinary harshness mm-hmm. of the winter
yes.
has got to do with the fact that the Gulf Stream is still flowing very weakly, and it is pushing itself farther and farther out to sea. Now, it hasn't dropped down yet in the sense that it's still reaching around up all the way to Europe. And so over there, it's not much changed. But over here, it's farther offshore. And we're seeing that the winter weather from the north has a lot more of an effect. And what we're going to see in the spring will be a little bit different, because the desalinization of the polar waters in the north and south. This means that this water will change temperature much more quickly, begin to change temperature much more quickly than it has in the past.
Well, what are the extremes for
and
this?
You're going to see very heavy weather.
Yeah, okay. Well, if it takes the flip that they're talking about in the article, in this article, if it does the flip, boom, what would be the range of consequences for the American Northeast?
Well, I think that it depends on the season. If this happens in like high summer, if the Gulf Stream suddenly stops flowing,
yes,
you'll see extraordinarily bad storms. We'd see the superstorm scenario in some form emerge, probably with very many really really intensive thunderstorms and. Really a type of storm that we don't record, what they call a supercell, but there would be very big mega supercells involved. It would be bad. It would be really, really bad over all of Canada, or eastern Canada and the northeastern and...
What kind of ultimate temperature change range would the Northeast look at?
It would be looking at harsh, very hot summers, with really violent weather, especially on the shoulders in the spring and the fall, and plunging then into winters that would really become intolerable. There would be areas of the Northeast which people would have to leave, but they wouldn't really be viable, and a lot of Canada would be in the same boat.
Europe would freeze, of course.
Europe will freeze, and the northern tier of Europe, places like Siberia, where they're 10 million people living in northern Siberia are going to go. They're going to have to leave. The main problem with Europe is going to be a shortened growing season, and this is going to be true worldwide. Changes in growth patterns of crops, a shortened growing season in Europe is going to result in, even where people are able to hang on in terms of the harsh weather, it's going to result in food shortages in parts of the world where we have not had food shortages in living memory.
Well, if Great Britain, Whitley, went to temperatures equal right now to Labrador, which is what they say would happen, to some degree it would become not habitable for a lot of people.
Not habitable in the northern parts of it, no.
Yeah, not
it
habitable.
Wouldn't be. And here's the thing. What's so ironic is it that they think there's nothing at all that can be done, and therefore we just have to kind of dance on the fantail of the Titanic?
Well, that's a really good question.
Yes.
Is that a reason not to report it? Because there's no action
that we can take,
but that's not a reason not to report this.
No,
it's
but there
not.
Is every reason to. But the thing is, there's a lot that can be done. As we pointed out in Superstorm, and as I did a journal entry on my website, which lists. And it's also in the Superstorm section in the Quick Watch section on my website.
The problem is, Whitley, though, that a lot of it is financially untenable.
It isn't.
Well,
no. It's easy stuff. If we all did it, if Blair, Bush, the president, the I don't know what's happening in France right now. I think the prime minister just got arrested. So, say the president of France, Berlusconi, the chancellor of Germany, Putin.
And if they all got together, what?
All stood up and said, do these 10 things voluntarily, everybody.
Yes.
We would slow this process down enough.
All right. All right. Hold it right there for a moment. We'll take a break here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back. This is such a magnitude. Some of the press out there has got to jump on this. So if you work for a large network, just do me a favor and humor me. I mean, go to coasttocoastam.com and read New Ice Age and the Pentagon's Weather Nightmare, and then see if you can not report it.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good evening, everybody. We are involved with Whitley Strieber right now, and we're talking about the weather. By the way, gusting up to about 50 miles an hour, I think, in parts of L.A., and it really ripped through here today as well. The weather is going to get more and more violent. It's going to continue to get more violent until we finally begin to get supercells and that sort of thing, and Europe literally freezes. That's what's ahead, and we're trying to get a little coverage for this little event. All right, well, one more time. I know a lot of you in the big media listen to me. I know a lot of you at the networks, the producers and so forth listen to me. So humor me on this one, and go to our website at www.coasttocoastam.com, read the two articles from incredibly impeccable sources. The one, of course, quoting Woods Hole and talking about Europe freezing. That's right, just freezing, becoming, as is Labrador, the United States having tremendous effects, the world having tremendous effects. Read that article, and all of the PhDs that back it up. Read the Pentagon's Weather Nightmare, and then for God's sakes, go into your network and convince them that this is more serious than whatever happened with Michael Jackson or whatever other infotainment they've got running that night, and give it a few minutes, for God's sakes. It's an earth-shaking, world-changing event, and you're not reporting on it. You're not doing your job. So, hey, Whitley.
Okay.
You know something about the Pentagon, right? They've apparently...
Yeah.
Tell us.
Well, they have produced a report, and the Fortune magazine story is in part based on it. And one of the things that it does is it discusses the vulnerabilities around the world, and the what basically they're concerned about is that disruptions of growing of crop disruptions are going to cause starvation, and this is going to lead to what they call a raider mentality, which is, they point out, always been true. When people are starving, they don't just sit down and take it. They go and try to find something to eat.
That's right.
The other thing is that there are some vulnerabilities in our country that we're not really aware of. One of the big ones, oddly enough, is on the West Coast, not on the East Coast, but on the West Coast, where there are a lot of reservoirs and aqueducts at sea level close enough to the coast to where significant storm surges could inundate them and basically break the water transport system for fresh water all up and down the coast. And that is a very sobering and significant danger.
I wonder if anybody could even estimate the economic impact should this occur quickly.
Well, it's beyond that.
Yeah, it's beyond.
You're talking about the end of an the way an economy works. It's more than, you can't really put a dollar figure on it. It's beyond measure, really.
Yeah. I keep trying to give people the measure of the magnitude of this story so that the right people will pick it up in the world. Didn't you tell me that the president did not utter the word environment in his State of the Union message? Now,
yeah, he didn't. No.
Yeah, he didn't, yeah. Well, so then if that's not the environment affecting us real quick,
is it a dirty word? There's a real failure of leadership worldwide, and it's not just one president. It's all presidents for more or less a whole quarter of a century, as well as most European leaders, because we have the Kyoto protocols, but it's based around an idea which is very dubious of planting large numbers of trees. The problem being that it's been discovered that saplings are actually emitters of carbon dioxide. So if you plant too many trees at once, you're going to make things a whole lot worse. Ironically, a couple of years ago, the Prime Minister of Canada came out with what I was referring to earlier in the program, a simple, straightforward way of reducing CO2 emissions. Now, we know this is all part of a large natural cycle that's going to happen anyway, but we can slow it down. And as we slow it down, we can maybe learn more about how to handle it.
But we're not even taking steps to slow it down, really.
And the thing that's so sad is the steps aren't costly. They involve only actions, simple actions by average individuals. If people in the developed world, that is to say in Japan, the United States, Australia, Canada, Europe, all did this. I mean, these are the people who emit the most. If they all did this simple group of things, we'd be okay.
I'm not sure I'm convinced of that, Whitley.
Well,
I mean,
okay.
That's very optimistic on your part.
It is optimistic. I mean, we'd be okay not for 100 years, but we would be okay for 20 years. Or 15 years, anyway, but enough time to at least do some forward planning. But right now, it is mired down in these horrible arguments about whether or not to completely disrupt the economic life of the world over this.
Well, look, Whitley.
We're never going to do it.
I cannot decide myself whether the hand of man has anything to do with this at all or whether it's just a natural climate snap.
Oh, no, it's both.
Why even have that discussion? What's happening, as Woodhull says, already may have begun. And if in fact it has begun, I take another tack than you. I don't think there's going to be anything we can do to stop it at all. I think all we can do is quickly adjust where we grow our food, fuel supplies that are going to be needed. We need to face up to what's about to change, it seems to me. And taking steps, should the hand of man be involved? That's fine, Whitley, but I don't think we're going to change it. I think it's a force greater than ourselves.
Well, right now it may be true. It may be that we have crossed the line, but you know, it's true. I'm always optimistic and I'm always believing. I wouldn't have written books like Nature's End and Superstorm if I didn't believe that change was possible. Why bother? I mean, why not just write cool mysteries and vampire novels and have fun and not worry about it? But the in fact, the warning, the Woods Hole warning, is a really dire warning, and I don't want to be a Pollyanna. It is very, very serious.
It's very dire.
It is, and it is. It is like it was lifted right out of the pages of our book 15 or 20 years before we thought it would ever happen.
Exactly. Correct.
You know,
exactly.
It's a weird thing to have written a book like that and to see it actually happening.
Yes, it's weirder than you can imagine.
Very weird.
It just, like, as I said, when I read it, it stood the hairs on the back of my neck up. I thought, oh, man, here it comes. This is it. It has
begun. I was thinking the other day of when this all started in my mind. And, you know, it started, I had an encounter with a man in I've never known exactly who he was, in Toronto, the night of the end of a book tour.
In the hotel room, right?
In the hotel room in June of 1998. And he mentioned some things about, he mentioned how it all worked in sort of just one little brief paragraph. And that was what began the odyssey that gradually put it all together. And I think our book was the first place that it was really put together. It was, there was an Atlantic Monthly article where it was somewhat put together. And there had been some, there was enough in terms of ice information about ice cores and the fossil record to show, and this is the thing, by the way, that the fossil record does show that this, that a kind of storm kicks up, the superstorm.
About every 13,000.
Yeah, that is so off the scale, apparently, that we don't even have a way of, we don't even have it described. It's not even, it's not described in our lexicon of weather that can happen. And we know, it just recently, there was a discovery made in Peru as glaciers ironically melt. They make these discoveries that some Peruvian glaciers had at their bases plants that had been quick frozen. Now you think about this. 10,000-year-old glaciers. On their base, there had been, when these glaciers started, there was plant life, lush plant life growing that was quick frozen, and it took 10,000 years.
In the mouths of dinosaurs, too.
For it, I mean, to be in the mouths of mammoths.
Woolly mammoths.
Mammoths, for it to be unfrozen. Now a storm that works like that, that hits with unbelievable fury and then sits without change for 10,000 years. We don't have anything like that described, but it happens.
Yes, it
and
it happens.
We do know that conditions now are like they were some time in terms of years, maybe a few years, maybe 50 years. We really don't know how long before that happened. We know this.
All right. Again, all of this said, it's just not Whitley and Art. Now it's reputable scientific organizations, really the best, Woods Hole, like that, saying it may already have begun, and here's what's coming. And I guess there's an awful lot more that our Department of Defense knows about, which you can read to some degree in the Fortune magazine, and then you know even more, Whitley.
Yeah, and on our website on Monday, there's going to be a huge story about the Pentagon.
Well,
it's called Pentagon Says Weather Wars in Our Future, and it'll be up there on Monday morning. They're working on it now.
Do you think they're working, our military, that is, our government, on... Do you think they do know, Whitley, and have considered at the highest levels and are working on ways scientifically to try to do something about it?
You know, that gets to issues of, like, what HAARP is and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Art, I honestly don't know.
Maybe it does.
Or maybe it's about what chemtrails are. Maybe they're that idea of not Robert Oppenheimer, of... one of the nuclear scientists, his name will come to my mind in a minute, who had suggested putting aluminum chloride particles in the atmosphere to
That's
reduce
right.
the solar energy reaching
That's right.
Earth.
Yes.
You know, the honest truth is none of that is going to make any difference.
Okay, let's go down that road. Suppose it happens. Europe freezes. Let's say nothing happened, but Europe freezing. That would be a worldwide catastrophic event in itself. And what do you think our government might do, for example, as it sees a Great Britain begin to turn into a giant icicle? Are we going to send aid to Great Britain? Are we going to become involved or isolationist? What do you think the U.S. would do?
The thing is, it's not aid they're going to need. It's living space.
Well, do we throw open the borders to Europeans and say...
I think they're going to go south. I think they'll have to.
Toward the African?
Absolutely. I think they'll go south. I think that there will be a great migration southward.
You think world capitals will change and move to the south along with the populace?
I think populations will move southward. I think that probably southern Europe will become much more crowded. And I think North Africa would become Europeanized.
And its effect on the Middle East, where all that oil is?
Well, I don't think that they would, in a situation like that, the people of the North are going to be the ones who are heavily armed and capable of carrying out an invasion. And it's going to, in effect, be the same thing that happened during the time of the Roman Empire, and for the same reason.
I mean, this is the kind of thing that causes world wars, right?
Oh, yeah. This is the kind of thing. This is what caused the fall of the Roman Empire. It is basically bad weather and growing problems growing crops in Central Asia and Eastern Asia caused a movement, like a house of cards effect, a movement of tribes across the West, and they turned out to be using horses in ways that the Romans had not discovered, and they were actually technologically superior, even though they were much less civilized. And in this case, Europe, I mean, do we really think that these very peaceful European governments will sit and quietly die?
No.
Because it's not nice?
No.
To invade these relatively helpless countries to the south? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. And even if it has the potential to get to this level, folks, we're already talking about a world revolution. Doesn't this deserve a minute or two on the evening news? I mean, again, it's Woods Hole, people like that are saying this. It's not Art Whitley. It's, you know, as mainstream as you can get. And the news has got to get out because, you know, you got to know about something before you start to do something about it. And if you don't hear about it on the evening news in America, Whitley, you just know it can't be true. It's just got to be some kind of rumor or something. So how do we break through the blockade?
Here is from the Pentagon report. And I say this because this would be a great soundbite. Violent storms are increasingly common as the Gulf Stream's current becomes wobbly on its way to collapse, which it is in fact doing now. A particularly severe storm causes the ocean to break through levees in the Netherlands, making coastal cities such as The Hague unlivable.
Mm-hmm.
In California, the Delta Island levees in the Sacramento River are breached, disrupting the aqueduct system transporting water from north to south. Mega droughts afflict the U.S., especially in the southern states, along with winds that are 15% stronger on average than they are now, causing widespread dust storms and soil loss. This is what the Pentagon is saying is going to happen.
When was that report issued?
What they've given me to look
okay,
at.
Okay, but it must be
it's recent.
It must be on top of this other story.
It must be quite recent. I think it's within the past few months. I'm just guessing.
Doesn't this make it the mother of all national security issues? I mean, as all the terrorist stuff is, isn't this much worse?
It is the greatest environmental change recorded in probably at least 10,000 years.
Before
recorded history. There's never been one this big in the history, recorded history, of mankind. it may be that the last time this happened, it destroyed a great civilization. Maybe that's what all the Atlantis legends are about. I don't know. But it is drastic. It is very, very serious.
It was maybe easy to ignore when it was not going to be in our lifetimes. But this legend is going to occur in our lifetimes. Or at least they're saying in here that that's what may be happening right now, starting. They said it was like, boom, like that, like throwing a switch. And once the switch was thrown, the end result was inevitable.
Growing tensions in gender novel alliances. Canada joins Fortress America in a North American bloc. Alternatively, Canada may seek to keep its abundant hydropower for itself, straining its ties with the energy-hungry U.S.
Uh-huh.
North and South Korea align to create a technically savvy nuclear-armed entity. Europe forms a truly unified bloc to curb its immigration problems and protect against aggressors. Russia, threatened by impoverished neighbors in dire straits, may join the European bloc. Then it goes on to say, as the planet's carrying capacity shrinks, an ancient pattern reemerges, the eruption of desperate all-out wars over food, water, and energy supplies. As Harvard archaeologist Stephen LeBlanc has noted, wars over resources were the norm until about three centuries ago.
All right, well, Whitley, I don't know how much stronger we can come at them, and all I can say is thank you for being here, brother.
And thank you, brother.
Talk to you shortly, and we'll just keep pounding away.
Scary to be a couple of prophets yelling into the wind.
Into the night, into the wind. You got it. Thanks,
yep.
Thanks, Whitley.
Goodbye.
And once again, if you're a producer for a large network program, humor me, even though I'm Art Bell, go to my website and read these two stories. Would you please? They're up there tonight at coasttocoastam.com. They might not be up there for long, so go now and read them and see if in all good conscience you cannot run it.
Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And as far as I know, we're the only show of its kind walking it, you know, as far out on a limb as we walk on a regular basis, bringing you alternative news, stuff that you just don't hear anywhere else normally. And here comes one of those things right now. Sean David Morton. is a remarkable person, a futurist, intuitive, earth-sensitive. We've heard his stunning and startling predictions made on this show since he first appeared on Coast to Coast AM over 11 years ago now. 11 years ago. Sean studied with the Dalai Lama in India, lived as a monk in Nepal. There he learned meditative techniques that enhanced his own abilities, allowing him to get in tune with the earth, induce visions, read maps, predict geologic events, and taught him to travel in the time stream. That's quite a lot. His track record of predicting earth changes, catastrophes, economic trends, the stock market. Oh, he's done very well with the market, by the way. I got several emails complimenting Sean on his market so far this year. Political events have brought him international recognition as a way to bring his visions to the world. In 1993, Sean started the Prophecy Research Institute and has since then been the publisher and editor of the international monthly magazine, the Delphi Associates Newsletter, which is the nation's foremost publication, prophecy, prediction, and cutting-edge news. Now, as with a lot of people out on a limb, you know, a lot of people love Sean David Morton and a lot of people hate his guts. And that's the kind of, you don't get very many middle reactions to people who make predictions and have prophecy. You just don't get a lot of mid-range reactions. Usually it's either love or hate. Well, love or hate, coming up in a moment, Sean David Morton. Well, all right, actually, you know, that's worth exploring a little bit. When you say the name, Ed Dames, Sean David Morton, there are other similar names I could toss at you. There's very infrequently a, they're all right. You don't get those reactions. You get either, God, I love him, he is so right on, I just wait to hear the next word he's going to say, or a total fraud, I hate his guts. You know, there's hardly ever any middle range. There's more like both the I love him and I hate him, the type ranges. Sean, any idea why that is?
Well, I think it has something to do with, I think so many of the marvelous people that you have on your show, that people are, whenever you're challenging an established paradigm, or whenever you are challenging a belief structure with a philosophy, and, you know, you have to admit that, Over the past, gosh, and it's actually been 13 years since I've been on your show, since 1991, actually, so we're in our 13th year here. You challenge a lot of people's, first off, you're challenging people's conceptions, you're challenging people's paradigms, you're challenging their, box of what they believe to be real. And, I think the nice thing about what I've been able to do with, at least my prophecies and predictions and tried, very assiduously to do on this program is to try to get a documentation of things that I've said here and in the recordings of the show.
And the program has certainly achieved that. Before we get into prophecy and prediction, though,
sure.
In the last hour, Whitley and I discussed not prophecy and prediction, but a report from Woods Hole.
Right.
You know, and others. I mean, really, the top scientists in the world.
Right.
Of an event that's going to shake the world, or potentially would shake the world, to its very foundations in every way imaginable, including perhaps a world war. Mm-hmm. It's that big, and it still hasn't hit the major networks. Got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, it's the shifting of the fabulous articles you have on your website about the Pentagon's problem, and of course the shifting of the Gulf Stream. And,
yes.
If you remember, we talked about this. I think, for about 10 years, we've been talking about so much of this. And remember back in the days when it was just, it seemed like just the lunatic fringe was talking about these predictions, and these.
Yes.
We thought that these predictions were maybe hundreds of years away. And now it's not even years, it's possibly months.
It may be already underway.
And the biggest shift being, and you can put this into a huge political science context. When I was at USC, we used to take punch cards and put in paradigms exactly like this into computers there, to come up with political science, solutions. That if the Gulf Stream, within the next 10 years, for example, stops hitting Europe, and Europe begins to glaciate, and we're talking savagely glaciate.
Oh, yeah.
We're no longer talking about 50 years, which is what they were thinking was going to happen between 2040 to 2050 or so. But once again, we're in that magical, mystical, and yet horrific time frame of 2012 to 2014. Again, within 10 years or so of Europe glaciating, then that means that you were quite possibly going to have masses of the population of Europe beginning to move south into the more equatorial regions of Africa. And, of course, look what's happened over the course of, I mean, let's take the, if you want to take the grand conspiracy theory of this and say that the prevalence of AIDS, whether or not you believe the Strecker memorandum or that AIDS was purposely induced into the populations in Africa to basically wipe out huge sections of Africa laced in polio vaccines through the World Health Organization or what have you, the end result has been the decimation and depopulation of large chunks of Africa. Now you're seeing a political structure being put into place to control much of what's going on in the Middle East. I'm saying that you're going to have these Asiatic, Russian, and Caucasian populations are going to have to start moving south down towards the equator and start populating sections of Africa within the next 20 years or so due to a quite possible glaciation of Europe. And going all the way back, and we've talked about this a couple of times on this program, there was a report that was done by the military in association with the RAND Corporation here in Santa Monica. And it was published in a book called World in Peril by Kenneth White, and it was called The Flight of the Key Bird. And most of this was being discovered between 1945 and about 1952 or so, when the military was mapping polar routes to open them up for commercial travel, when they discovered that there were actually three northern magnetic poles, and that what was happening is that the pole was static from about 1850 when it was first taken to 1945, and then from 45 through 55, they noticed that the poles themselves, the magnetic flux of the Earth, was in fact moving or jumping.
That's
and their
right.
theory was that they believed that a series of atomic tests, you know, of course we've dropped, almost 2,500 nuclear weapons on our biggest enemy, Nevada, and, you know, right outside of Las Vegas.
That's right.
And, that this has actually managed to knock the Earth slightly off kilter. And their predictions, and these were published front page news in Look magazine at that time, and this came right out of the RAND Corporation, RAND built a huge model of the Earth, complete with magma and magnetic fields and what have you. And what happened was is that when True North, which is somewhere up near around, I think, Boothby Bay, Canada or so, and Magnetic North met, that in 60% of their experiments, you actually had, first off, you had a wild changing of the oceanic currents. You had a huge changing or a massive changing of the electromagnetic field of the planet, which, of course, then affects the weather. And at the point of where Magnetic and True North begin to meet, the actual speed of Magnetic North would actually pick up, and their theory was is that you would see Magnetic and True North meeting sometime in the time frame. Once again, military report between 2012 and approximately 2014. And then, and in the RAND Corporation tests, they found that in 40% of the tests, you had an electromagnetic pole shift of the planet. In other words, the north-south pole shifted with a, not an appreciable massive wobble of the Earth, but unfortunately in 60% of their tests, you actually had their model completely flip over and sort of low on its side. And as I said, this was reported front page, it was like 1968, 69 or so of Look magazine, but it was just one of those things, it was too big. People just can't really get their minds around the entire planet flipping over when at first the military thought, well, we should classify this information or do something with
it. So you think that's what's going on with this story? It's just too big?
Yeah, well, it's very, I mean, when you're talking about the planet possibly flipping over or doing whatever, I mean, first off, there's really nothing you can do about it. Second off, it's just one of those things where, well.
But because we can't do something about something, it's never stopped us before from reporting on it if it's big enough. I mean, we
right.
report on terrorism, which we don't seem to be able to do a hell of a lot about so far.
Mm-hmm.
And canceled flights, and I don't know. I mean, they've got room for so much stuff, but something of this magnitude, they don't have room for it, or they're not doing it. Would you suggest because we can't affect it?
I don't know. I'm not sure what the. I mean, as I said, the military originally was thinking about classifying the report, and then when it came out in Look magazine, the public outcry of it was, you know, nothing. The public was like, oh, well, that's interesting. Another one of those sort of scientific anomalies. I'm saying that everything that they reported in the flight of the Key Bird, this was a tricked out, I think, B-29 bomber. It was the last one left besides the Enola Gay that they tricked out to do this and do these experiments, which, as I said, opened up commercial travel through the poles and was considered the greatest military achievement, actually, for the latter half of the 20th century. Everything that they said in this report, including the shifting of the Gulf Stream, the shifting of various water currents, the massively increased, the shorter seasons, if you will, because we're going directly from, you know, dead summer to dead winter with the disappearance of the lull periods of fall and spring, which are leading, of course, to then massive snows and then massive and massive floods when the snows begin to melt. Everything they talked about these weather gyrations leading up to 2012 to the 2014 period. And as I said, whereas years ago this was all the lunatic fringe, and I've been saying since I think day one on this program when we started talking about this that leading up to the period of late 2004 to 2005, that there are a series of warnings, both from the Egyptians, from the time coding in the Great Pyramid of Giza, from the Mayan prophecies, and then take all the metaphysical stuff and throw it out the window, and then look specifically at the economic prognosticators, just doing it from a political science standpoint, of actually taking the patterns, the economic patterns and cycles, borrowing patterns and cycles, aging populations, if you will, the great fourth turning of what was going to happen as the center can't really hold, the closer we get to the 2005 time period or so, leading us up to what I believe is going to be a tribulation-type period, both economically, socially, politically, and ecologically, between 2005 and approximately 2012, leading to some kind of new society, new civilization, some kind of quantum shift in consciousness for the people at large. And I think it's one of those things that's going to have to become a necessity, if you will. But we have to look at, if you look at the trends of where we're going, you start thinking to yourself, how do you get ahead of the curve? And I'm always trying to think in terms, and this is why I've been so successful with the stock market and so successful, you know, economically and politically. I'm always thinking ahead of the curve, saying, well, this is where the trend and where we are going, based on my understanding of these various cycles. What can you do? How can you empower yourself to be able to put yourself in a situation where you can profit and prosper from those situations, and at the same time prepare yourself for it? And right now, within the next 18 months or so, I mean, we're not talking, once again, years or decades. It's 18 months.
It sounds terrible to say that you can profit from what will be death and disaster lot of people. But the fact of the matter is, you can.
Well, I'm not saying profit, for example.
Well, I am.
If you see the computer revolution coming, you know.
No. I'm saying you can profit by it. If you think you know what's going to happen, if you think Europe is going to freeze, if you think population centers are going to shift, there are definitely ways you can profit from it. In other words, you can invest in what you know people are going to have to begin to do.
True. This is true.
It's that simple.
And in that case, for example, I knew that we would, well, in my case, and let me admit to this, that I bought in 1998-99, stock in Raytheon and TRW and Hughes, and because I knew that the United States, the beginning in 2000-2001, was going into a militaristic cycle, and that we would see trillions of dollars being spent on the rearming, if you will, of the United States.
Yes.
And that all this money would be poured back into the military-industrial complex.
There are.
At the same time, though, you can invest in things like Apple Computer, for example, that makes movies, or computers, or pharmaceutical companies in certain aspects that are making certain, you know, life-enhancing drugs. You know, so there's a lot of different ways around it. So, or you could say, if you know Europe's going to freeze, what's the best thing to do? If you get a hold of all the oil in Iraq, then you've pretty much got Europe by the short hairs, don't you?
Well, I haven't seen the weapons of mass destruction yet.
I'm just saying, if you control the oil.
Well, I know exactly what you're saying.
And Europe gets most of the oil, and if we control the oil that goes directly to Europe, that puts us, it's like playing a huge game of Risk. That puts us in control of that entire power block.
So then, would it be your view that we invaded Iraq for exactly that purpose?
I think so. I mean, if you just look at, the global consequences of the whole deal, and the fact that we are running out of oil between 2005 and 2010, and now we're sitting on, I think, one of the largest oil fields on the planet. And once again, we needed to, and I've been talking about this again, that there were going to be two global wars that would be fought. The first one would be against Islam, and I said this as far, I can't even remember how far back I said this. First series of conflicts and wars would be against Islam.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
If we essentially clear up Iraq, get rid of all bad element, kill them at great expense to ourself and our soldiers' lives, are we really going to just walk away from Iraq, say, have elections, have democracy, have a good day, see you later? Or are we there to stay and to control and invest in and take control of the oil interests there?
I would think the latter, specifically. I mean,
that's a pretty blunt question, but I, you know,
it's why we're there. I mean, part of the reasons why, for example, the rationale behind the Arab terrorists.
So then when we say we're going to have elections and then say have a nice day and we're going to leave Iraq, not stay 1 minute longer than necessary, I believe were the words. Mm-hmm. You say that's a bunch of bull.
Yeah, well, because look who we're handing the country over to. If you remember, well, everybody talks about annihilating the Baathists. The Ba'ath Party were the moderates there. They were the 10 or 15% of the people that weren't the radical Shiites. The Baathists were the ones that were, even though they were Saddam's party and were in control, are considered relative moderates in the Middle East. And if you look at the guy, this Ayatollah that's getting ready to take control of the country, once again, he is radical Shiite. So you're just going to hand Iraq over to a bunch of Shiites, which then allows them to then team up with, say, Libya and Iran and the more radical sections of Saudi Arabia. I mean, that was the biggest problem with taking out Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, recent news has it that the president next week will agree to a deep investigation into the intelligence alleged failures or gaps or skewing that led to starting the war with Iraq in the first place, that the president will lend his name to that investigation. Isn't that going to be political trouble for George Bush?
Well, I think it'll be interesting. He's already trying to blame George Tenet for most of it, or has been trying to get George Tenet as head of the CIA to pretty much fall on his sword for everything that's going on. But I think it's very enlightening that even before Bush was president, when I was making my predictions on this program between 97, 98, 99, and I was saying this guy's going to be president of the United States, he's going to go into Iraq, that's going to be his first order of business, somewhere around late 2002, 2003, the Iraq war is an inevitability. You look at Paul O'Neill's book.
As a loyal American, Sean, I even if I know the president made his decision to go into Iraq because of oil, I understand the national security significance of having taken that step,
mm-hmm.
and I don't necessarily fault him for it at all. It may be he made the best decision for America.
Okay.
I mean,
that
okay implies to me that you disagree with that.
What I was going to say was that he was simply looking for any excuse, and I've been saying from the get-go that he will find any excuse to go in and do what he's going to do.
Uh-huh.
And Paul O'Neill, in his latest book, the former Treasury Secretary, said from day one, the minute Bush got into office, he said, look, we're going in there. Somebody find me a way to do it. Find me an excuse. And that's a direct quote out of O'Neill's book, which just plays out everything that I was saying from the get-go. I mean, I think that the political realities are, if you really want to look at it from the political realities of this, good or bad, that the United States is an empire.
Well, when are we going to tell the Iraqis the disappointing news that we're not leaving as expected?
Well, did we leave Saudi Arabia when we placed troops in Saudi Arabia? When we said we were going to leave after the Gulf War? No.
No.
Have we ever left anywhere, really? That we haven't, you know, outside of, say, maybe Vietnam, I suppose, where, you know, we got run out.
Somalia.
Yeah, in Somalia, possibly. But you know,
yeah, I mean, basically beyond that, no, we haven't.
And the scope of influence is, and this was another prediction that I made on Coast to Coast.
Hold that thought. We're at the half hour. Let's take a break. Predictions, prophecy. Sean David Morton. We'll be right back.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, I think one of my guests said it last week, and I agree with him. I'm probably a political atheist, and people are always looking. I understand there's a lot of very conservative people in the audience and a lot of very liberal people, and they're always looking to try and figure out what side you're on and blast you for it, you know? Well, as a loyal American, let me say it again. I actually, if the president went and took Iraq for oil, then I understand that. I understand he couldn't say that's why he's doing it. Of course he couldn't say that. But I understand why he would do it. It may be in America's best interest, in fact, imperative national security interest, to have that oil. So I actually understand that. As a political atheist, I neither fault the president nor, well, maybe I praise him for that. Because if that's something we had to have, well, we're Americans. In a moment, Sean David Morton once again. Sometimes, Sean, I have a difficult time delineating between when you're making a sort of a political commentary or giving your opinion, or then when you're making an actual prediction based on what predictive powers you have.
I'll try to demarcate it more clearly.
Okay.
Try to very specifically state, okay, here's an opinion.
Well, exactly. Exactly. When things do come to you prophetically, as an intuitive, I'd like to understand the process by which they do come, as I bet a lot of the audience would. I think there are times when you put your hand on a map, right?
Yeah, a lot of that map dowsing, or cartomancy, as it's called.
Uh-huh.
I've been featured on television a couple of times, actually, on I think America's Best Kept Secrets, I think, was one, and I actually made predictions on the TV of Paranormal Borderline years ago, and they actually came back when the predictions came true and said, well, hey, here's a guy, we found this intuitive fellow who was actually right, and, you know, and featured me again on the show. A lot of it had to do with just having originally a natural talent and ability, which then I was introduced to remote viewing early on. And then Dr. Elizabeth Targ, Ruffel Targ's daughter, and I were very close friends in the 1980s, and did a lot of remote viewing from probably 83 to about 85 or so. And then I went on a spiritual journey to India, and I lived in Nepal and the northern part of India for a period of time. And that helps you focus, and it was a great thing for me because I got the best of both worlds. I got, with my knowledge of the remote viewing techniques from Russell Targ, and everything that they developed to the Eastern philosophy, allowed me to put together what I call my spiritual remote viewing workshops and seminars that I've been teaching across the country, and gave me a kind of a Western technology, if you will, that was sort of more left-brained, and the Eastern rationale and philosophy that was more right-brained, if you will, that allowed me to then kind of put these things together. The aspect of intuition, I see fields of energy. I think that's probably the best way to do it. Focusing on a particular person or a particular event, trying and then taking that event into the future, and then getting not only clairvisual but clairaudient. I mean, I see pictures, I see sights and sounds of things occurring.
Do you think, Sean, that you're tapping into the mass consciousness that's out there, this great connectiveness that everybody's now talking about?
Well, in some ways. I mean, obviously, we're all part of that. You're dipping into this this mass overmind, as Carl Jung called it, and you're trying to... and it's very, very strange, because I will get, because I work with teams of people, and because I have a lot of people who contribute to my newsletter, I mean, there have been many occasions where I've had, say, a dozen people from all different parts of the world call me and say that they believe a certain event is going to happen, and they think that something's going to happen. It's not like there's not disagreement, within the group. And I'll feel it out. You know, I mean, ultimately, my name goes on the newsletter, so I'm either taking the When we get something right, I try to spread all the credit around. When I get something wrong, I usually take the fall for it. So it's a, on the one hand, I've seen, it's very much like trying to predict which wave is going to hit the shore. And I've seen things collect in the mass consciousness, many things, and many times that never occur, that sort of peter out before they reach the shore, if you will.
Okay, well, a lot
I've seen other things that are completely unexpected.
Yeah, one of the things you've had a lot of luck predicting the waves of would be the stock market. You get a lot of credit for that. I get a lot of emails saying, man, Sean's right on the money so far this year with his predictions. Take me through what you think the market's going to do.
Well, here's a couple of interesting things. First off, dealing with the folklore of it, because it's Super Bowl weekend, and I just thought I'd throw this in there.
Yes.
That, as many people know, in regards to...
Don't tell me who's going to win yet.
Okay, well, then let me just...
We'll get to that right at the top of the hour.
I'll tell you the folklore then. The folklore is... that if the AFC, the American Football Conference, wins the Super Bowl, it is usually, and I would say this has been pretty true, I'd say true probably 80%, maybe as high as 85% of the time, that the years afterwards have been bad years. Bad years for the market, usually bad years for the economy, that there's been a contraction, if you will. Very much like, you know, people can predict what Wall Street's going to do by looking at hemlines, for example. Mini skirts, it's a good year, middies, you know, down to the ground, it's a bad year. So if the AFC wins the Super Bowl, it usually means that the stock market does poorly and that economic indicators go down and that you actually have a contraction of the economy. For example, 2 years ago, when the New England Patriots beat the Rams, the big upset of the Rams, the next day the stock market tanked. It went down something like 450 points, I think, the next day. Most people who know the common knowledge of this. Now, whether or not it's true or not, people think it's true. So once again, the stock market usually is like the heartbeat, if you will. And of course, if the NFC wins,
yes.
Usually, and it's kind of a weird thing because, you know, you've got the cats and the pats this time, and it's kind of strange because you have for the first time, well, technically the Baltimore Ravens were in, but they were the old Cleveland Browns. But you actually have an NFC team that is an expansion team,
yes.
which sort of offsets the table just a little bit. But if the NFC wins, usually it's felt because the NFC is more established, because they were the respectable league, because they've been around for 50 years or so, that if the NFC wins the Super Bowl, that you actually have positive economic indicators. For
why should anybody believe any of this?
Because it's historical fact. It does. It's fact. It works. I'm telling you, the Patriots tanked the market 2 years ago when it happened. You can look at it.
Well, so, right, but okay. But
what is the stock market? The stock market is, in essence, runs off a series of folklore, myths, legends.
Yeah.
It is the pulse of the people. It's not a robot. It runs off people's emotions primarily. So
yes.
I'm just saying that those are interesting indicators. With that said, I actually see, and this is you know, for a lot of the things that are going to happen this year. For a lot of the major, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the markets that's making no sense to me. For example, I predicted, I believe, when we had that brief time together, I think it was on for an hour or so, when I was in Kauai and I was working on the finishing up the Prophecy of the Pyramids documentary, at least writing it, and we shot it the last 2 weeks of November.
Right.
I talked about that the market was going to go, before Christmas, you would see the market go to 10,000 and well beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
That was also printed in my newsletter in November. And we've seen the market go to somewhere around 10,005. I think it's up to almost 10,000.
Oh, yeah, you nailed it.
And this is a massive upward trend. My original predictions were that I saw, and this was all going all the way back to 1997, that I said that in October of 2000 you would see the market tank, that you would see the market go to somewhere around 12,000. You would see, which it did, it went to 11,750, I think it was, before the big collapse happened.
Right.
You would then see 3 years of relative economic chaos.
Mm-hmm.
That from 2000 until approximately the spring of 2003, you would see a contraction of the economy. Now, this goes in, there's a seven-year cycle that I've actually figured out from figuring the biblical cycles and figuring the expansions and contractions of the economies, that you have, usually you have a seven-year war cycle and a seven-year peace cycle. We went through our seven-year war cycle from approximately 91, 92 under Clinton, to approximately 98, 99 or so. As a matter of fact, it was like the day he bombed Afghanistan, I think. The same day I think I was on the program because it was when he made the announcement about Monica Lewinsky And I said, watch this date, August 19th. Remember?
Yes.
I made the prediction, watch the August 19th thing. It was the same day he bombed, I think, Kaust it was.
Your record is pristine. Where is the market going?
So, okay. So, anyway, I'm saying that so that began our seven-year war cycle from now until approximately 2005. Right now, you're going to see a massive upward trend throughout the year for the market. You're going to see it, I believe, by July. You'll see the market break 11,000 again. But you're going to then have a readjustment. Now, we're just talking about the Dow. We're just talking about the Dow now. The Nasdaq's a whole other animal.
Okay.
But
I'd like to cover that too. But okay. The Dow at 11,000 around July.
You're going to see towards the end of July and the beginning of August. You're then going to see a downward trend in the market. So my suggestion would be is that you short somewhere around mid to late July through August, a downward trend with then a gradual upswing of the economy starting at the approximately about third week into October. Now, my prediction for the whole shebang here has been that you would see one final massive run-up of the market and that this would go until approximately the fall of 2005. And I've said conservatively, I saw the market at about 14.5 or so, and then liberally I saw the market somewhere around 16,000 or so, depending. And that this would be one final run of the market. I also believe that, and I've said this over and over and over again, that what is good for Wall Street is not good for Main Street, that as all the economic indicators are sort of plunging, you know, this economy that we're building, which is not really seeing any job creations, but at the same time, you have these companies and corporations whose stock is actually rising.
Yes.
And yet the stock market is going up and gold is going up at the same time, which doesn't really make a lot of sense outside of the fact that the dollar's getting killed and you're going to see the dollar hit a new low within about 6 months or so. You're going to see the dollar hit a new low against the euro.
Well, gold spiked 400 and better and
right.
Then just fell down below it here recently. So
now remember, the euro is actually backed by gold.
Yes.
And whereas the USD, the U.S. dollar, or should I say the Federal Reserve note, is backed by air, if you will, the faith and energy of the American people when everything was changed with the bankruptcy of 1933. So the fact that the euro is skyrocketing against the dollar and that gold is going up is kind of a weird thing. There's some very, very tense things going on behind the scenes as far as these banks go, because the Bundesbank and the Royal Bank of Scotland and the banks in England, usually when the price of gold started going up, they would threaten to dump gold on the world markets, primarily because they're leveraged against short-term gains in stocks versus their gold.
Okay, so, again, I want to be clear. Up around 11,000 better by July. Then a dip, but that's only part of a general rise, okay. Which then will go on for how long?
Through 2005. And this whole thing hits a gigantic economic and political wall by late 2005, so much so that, I mean, you will see a new depression in the United States. You will see whole communities rioting. You will see, I mean, there will be a gigantic economic meltdown of some kind by September, October of 2005.
Do you have any sense of what will precipitate that?
A lot of it's just going to be the complete collapse of the dollar. I think that you're going to see a hyperinflation of the dollar. You're already seeing, I believe, that the plan that's in place now is to divide up the U.S. currency into, well, the plan that's in place is to print what they call redbacks, which are a foreign currency, a foreign version of the U.S. dollar, so that when you leave the shores of the United States, you have to trade in any cash that you're using so that only these redbacks, this external foreign currency, will be used. It's exactly the same thing that the Japanese were forced to do in the 80s when they hyperinflated their currency, whereas they printed a foreign and domestic yen, and I think that that's what's going to happen in the U.S., that you're going to see a hyperinflation of the currency.
Well, on the currency markets, if we did that, which one would get traded?
Well, it would allow them to stabilize the redbacks, and I think the redbacks would be traded in the foreign nature because it would allow them to stabilize redbacks and stabilize the U.S. foreign currency and hyperinflate the U.S. currency here. And I don't see any other choice with the way things are going. I mean, literally, you have this current administration spending money like there's no tomorrow, because there's no tomorrow. literally. I've just never seen anything like it.
I haven't heard it put it that way before. Spending like there's no tomorrow, because there is no tomorrow, so what the hell? Isn't that what you just said?
Yep. So this is the weird makeup of this, with gold up, with the stock market rising. I think there's a lot of money to be made now. A lot of money to be made now in currency trading. And I think the new wave is using, there's a piece of software that's based on the Fibonacci curve that that I've been and many other people have been very successful in doing, you know, what used to be called arbitrage. But it's currency training as opposed to trading the Dow or whatever else.
What about the NASDAQ? We haven't mentioned that. We've been looking at the Dow. Where in all of this will the NASDAQ, how will it move during all of this?
Well, the NASDAQ's been doing, obviously, once again, I predicted that you would see the NASDAQ recover and that it would be the recovery in the technical sectors that would actually spur the economic upswings. I think the biggest stocks to be traded, and I recommended this a year or so ago, well, for quite some time. I've always thought that Apple Computer, I thought was not only a smart stock to buy, but an ethical stock to buy. And I think the biggest stock, I mean, I'm going to give somebody some tips now. Yesterday, Pixar, of course, that did Finding Nemo and Toy Story 1 and 2 and what have you, and Apple Computer, Steve Jobs, walked away from their deal with Disney, which is going to make Pixar the next Lucasfilm. And I think, and already Pixar's stock has gone up almost 3%. And I think Pixar is going to be one of the big stocks. I think entertainment stocks always are, shall we say, immune to a lot of the ups and downs of the markets as well.
And we're one of the major exporters of entertainment for the world.
That's pretty much all we do now. We don't really have an industrial society anymore.
No, we really don't, do we?
We're moving from all of our industry has been shipped overseas, so we're now, and that's going to be the other biggest challenge in the next 2 years, is this huge transformation of the workforce that nobody is really addressing, because they're going to have to completely retrain the job market from manufacturing to service. And even now, the biggest trend is, and this is one of the things that the immigration department, these big computer companies have specifically requested. Visas for large groups of Indians and Pakistanis into this country that are taking technical support jobs at $40,000 to $60,000 that used to be white collar jobs paying anywhere between $150,000 and $200,000. And next time you call tech support,
listen, don't tell me. I've called tech support about 2-3 times in the last couple of weeks, and you go to India. The Philippines,
right.
You go to all kinds of places.
And
it's absolutely astounding.
Call and they route Dell Computers doing it, AOL is doing it. They route your call directly to India.
Satellite companies are doing it. It's amazing, absolutely amazing.
And the thing about India and Pakistan specifically is they speak English. Obviously, they were British colony for 150 years. They're very technical. They're very bright. They have a fabulous educational system because of the British colonization. And once again, you don't really have a country unless you can enforce certain types of borders and. And
I'm not happy with it, Sean. I've called for technical support recently, and getting somebody that you cannot converse with straight on, where the two of you are struggling to understand each other, and there are cases like that, Sean, that they all don't speak perfect English by a long shot. Believe me, it's extremely frustrating when you sort of half know what you're trying to ask. You've got some technical problem that's driving you nuts, and the guy on the other end doesn't speak English that well. It's just impossible.
I think these are the people that are picking the football teams for the BCS, I think. Aren't they the ones that made LSU the national champion? I don't know.
It is going to create this need for everybody to get retrained because, like it or not, and the answer is pretty much not for most, our economy, the very basis of the structure is all changing.
Well, we're being foreclosed on, in essence. And all of our heavy industry, because of that foreclosure, if you will, is being shipped overseas. By the way, the only company that is not doing that is Apple Computer. Once again, I'm an Apple fan, though, and have been from the beginning, but Apple is not doing that. But Dell Tech Support is every single one of the other major computer companies.
Well, anyway, I understand why they're doing it. It's the nature of the world. Companies are like people. They're going to go and get the best buy they can.
Right. Well, that's why you're supposed to have government that's supposed to control these sort of things in some sort of a populist fair playing field. But that's not happening at all. Unfortunately, they're getting to get all the advantages of low cost and low wage and none of the disadvantages of shipping their product into the United States.
It is the eve of the Super Bowl.
Correct.
Right. And so we've skirted all around it, talked about skirts and Wall Street and who's going to win the Super Bowl. So let's lay it on the line right now, brother. It's tomorrow. I want to know who's going to win the Super Bowl.
I believe, with all the economic indicators in place, that it would be the Carolina Panthers 20-17 over the New England Patriots.
You hear that, folks? Carolina Panthers over New England 20-17. Well, that'll make it a good game, won't it?
Yep. It'll be an exciting game, but I think the Cats are going to pull it off.
All right, there you got it, folks. 20-17. We can hold Sean to that one, and tomorrow afternoon they promise to rock us.
Big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. We will rock you. Sing it now. We will rock you. Buddy, you're an old man, poor man, pleading with your eyes.
Take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
My guest is an intuitive, a prophet. He has made a lot of predictions on this program over many, many years now, actually over a decade, many, many of which have come true for a very long time. There I was calling him the prophet with more hits than a mafia hitman. He's Sean David Morton. He'll be back. We've got a lot of ground to cover this hour. There are a whole lot of things he wants to talk about, beginning with Mount Rainier and what's going to happen with UFOs across America and the world, SARS, and then the serious stuff. So, it's going to be quite an hour. Actually, we've got two more to go, if you'll just keep it right where you've got it. From the high desert in the middle of the night, this is exactly what it ought to be, where it ought to be, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. Stay right there. To brass tacks with Mr. Morton. I have a lot of radio friends, Sean, who are in the Seattle area, in the state of Oregon. A lot of really good friends up in that northwest area. Now, beginning a series of predictions here, you do have one for Mount Rainier, don't you?
Yes. Well, I'm talking about Mount Rainier as being, once again, two major things I saw as being the beginning of, I guess, the tribulation phase, if you will, for the United States, and in terms of Earth changes. And one of those would be the beginning of the fracturing in the New Madrid Fault, and which was paramount to a lot of Edgar Cayce's predictions, and the eruption of Mount Rainier. After doing a lot of the work on the maps today in preparation for this program,
mm-hmm.
and I think a confirmation of what I've been seeing for quite some time, using, and we've actually posted some of the Bible Cove stuff up on the website, which we've completely revamped today too. So, and I'll be totally sleeping in the room with the stinky cats tonight if I don't actually say DelphiAssociates.org. We reworked the website today. We've got a whole bunch of new stuff up there at DelphiAssociates.org. We have a special, a Super Bowl special for $50, which is $10 off the regular price of the newsletter. We now have an e-newsletter for people for only $35 a year, so no more waiting for printing or mailing. And we have an e-newsletter for people there. Now, getting to Seattle. A lot of what I'm seeing in the Seattle area begins in the fall, sometime around late September, October. You'll see a swarm of quakes around the Mount Baker area first, and then deep quakes in the, I would say, low 6 range or so underneath Seattle. And I believe that towards the end of 2005, we are looking at an eruption of Mount Rainier in Seattle.
And how severe would that be for Seattle?
Well, when you consider that for example, Mount Rainier is considered the most dangerous volcano in the North American continent. The weak side of Mount Rainier actually faces the city of Seattle.
And if it were to go?
You would have in the first hours, I would think, even with sufficient warning, which I believe they will have, there are still close to 25,000 people that are actually, that have homes and homesteads, you know, directly in the lava flows of the mountain itself. If Rainier was to go, and once again, and this is one of the more interesting aspects of running something like this through a program like the Bible Code, I know you don't put a lot of stock in that, but in the code itself, where when we ran Mount Rainier, and it said that Mount Rainier would erupt, and it gave us the years of 1811, which is the last time Rainier erupted, and 2005, all we're doing with the code is trying to verify, because you have to know what you're looking for in advance, verify the things that I've stated already or previously in my predictions. And I think that leading up to 2005 specifically, and with what I've just done with the maps for later this year, late 2004 through the spring of 2005, I think you're looking at an eruption of Mount Rainier. And I think that that's going to... I don't think it's going to wipe out Seattle, but it's going to cause a huge amount of chaos, a massive amount of destruction. I do not, once again, see a great deal of death. I think that there are warnings to take place. I think that people are evacuated. I think there will be enough warning beforehand. But
a lot of financial damage.
Oh, huge, huge financial damage. Mm. And once again, as I said, the weak side of the mountain faces the city. We had... It was about 2 years ago. We had a big piece in the LA Times here, which you know you never heard about in the city of Seattle, but a whole section on how dangerous Mount Rainier was and what would occur if the mountain were to blow and how it would directly affect the city. And
well, if you owned a home there, what would you do now? If you owned a home, do you have the strength of conviction in this prophecy or prediction that you would sell that home and get the hell out?
I would. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking now about, you know, because I'm looking at the 2005 time period, I'm looking now possibly getting out of Los Angeles within the next 18 months or so, and thinking about, I know a lot of the things that I'm seeing are happening more on the East Coast and more in the Pacific Northwest rather than focusing.
Maybe I should ask you, why are you thinking of getting out of L.A.? What's going to happen
because
there?
Because I think that, once again, I'm seeing, this is all 2005. It's about 18 months away. I mean, this is where the rubber's meeting the road, Art. For all the years that we've been doing the program and coming together on this, and years ago, I never thought that I would live to see this phase where everything's falling into place now.
All right.
With the economic collapse, you're going to see riots in the major cities. And along the same aspects of, I hate to use the word race war because it's not really going to be that. It's going to be economic classes and religious classes. I think you're going to see a huge backlash against Muslims in this country for terrorist attacks that are about to occur not only in Israel, but more.
Yes, you're predicting a smallpox attack on Israel, aren't you, that you claim will kill over 14,000 people?
Yeah.
Is that right?
And that's going to be, and the time coding of that is later this year. And we're looking at, and I have to give this warning, although Let me give the caveat on this too. You want to talk about the Washington?
I would like to know, for example, with respect to the attack on Israel.
Right.
Is this coming from the Bible code, or are you discerning it elsewhere, or all of the above, or what?
Let me demarcate again. This is directly a Bible code quote. This I believe, and this is how serious this is being taken. After we got finished with our Egypt documentary, the rest of my crew went to New York, where they interviewed Michael Drazin, the author of the Bible Code book,
yes,
who has now met with the Pentagon. And through urgings of things that I've done for the Pentagon through Project Foresight, I kept telling them, look, you got to look into this Bible Code stuff. I think there is something that is valuable there.
Okay, let's stop for a second right here, Sean, for the benefit of the audience and my own. Let me understand, if you can explain short, sweet, and simple, why you have become devoted to this Bible code, Drazin's Bible code. Why have you become a believer? What can you tell us about the Bible code that would make us believe the process being used to discern from the Bible? I guess we ought to explain to people. Tell them what the Bible code is.
I'll give it to them briefly.
No, please.
There's five books in the Old Testament. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy.
Right.
When Moses came down from the mountain, this code, which is actually called the Torah, is a string of Hebrew letters. And Hebrew letters are also numbers. A is 1, B is 2, et cetera, et cetera. It's very much, and they're in an unbroken string, very much like something like a sequence or a code number sequence that would be spit out by a supercomputer. What occurred was is in the 1980s, a rabbi, professor, doctor, Eliyahu Rips at Hebrew University, taking, by the way, the research that was done by people going all the way back to Isaac Newton, began to run words through the code itself and find that there was what they call an equidistant skip letter sequence, that, you know, every fifth letter in the code, for example, would then come out to a word or a sentence, if you will.
Okay, is that what it was, every fifth one, or does it vary and become more complex than that?
It varies and becomes more. I'm just using that as an example. But let's say you're putting in you put in the word Rainier as an example, because I've got that one right in front of me.
All right.
And these are all up on the website, by the way. We posted these.
Okay.
These are courtesy of Joseph Noah, who's written the book called Future Prospects of the World According to the Bible Code, which has now become one of the best-selling books on the topic here.
All right. Let's say you put in the word Rainier. How does it work?
You put in the word Rainier, and in Deuteronomy, in the book of Deuteronomy, in a very, what we call a very short blast, came out the words in the same equidistant letter sequence. In other words, you're looking for either every fourth letter, every fifth letter, every sixth letter, and when you find the word Rainier, it then goes along, and let's say it finds the word Rainier every fifth letter. It then goes through all the other letters in the code, finding every other letter on the fifth letter to be able to decode that sequence. And it comes up with Eruption, Mount, USA, Prospect, Rainier, 2005. Now, this is just in one book of Deuteronomy. And there's another one, I believe in Leviticus as well, that says the same thing, Eruption, Mount, USA, Prospect, Rainier, and also gives the year 1811 and 2005 being the last time that Rainier exploded. So in the process of this, Rips, who is an expert in what we call group theory, which is what the movie Beautiful Mind was about, Russell Nash won the Nobel Peace Prize for coming up with group theory. He's found that you can, they poo-poo the predictive aspect of it because you have to know what you're looking for. But, I mean, they found Twin Towers, Bin Laden, New York City. It gave the year that this was going to happen, and they've taken it seriously enough that Drazin met with people at the Pentagon who are now using the Mossad, the CIA, the Pentagon, are now taking this seriously enough to be able to take the code and look for clues as to possible future terrorist action being taken against the United States and possibly Israel. Specifically, let me demarcate again, that in the code itself, you have a prediction about this year, 2004, a smallpox attack on Israel, that the code itself says will kill 14,700 people, gives an exact number. You have, and then I took a body of my predictions, working with Mr. Joseph Noah, who's the expert on this, and him going through my newsletters and saying, okay, well, this is interesting. Sean sees this all the way back in 1994. He then runs things through the code, and he comes up with what he calls prospects. Now, the fascinating part about this is that it does not preclude what we call the factor of the grace of God, if you will. That when you're talking about a prospect, this prospect seems to point to a series of factors that can come together at a number of points in history. A classic example of this being some sort of atomic or low-grade nuclear attack against Jerusalem specifically, and the Bible code being very clear that there would be some kind of terrorist attack, atomic in nature, but giving 2 years, that the first possibility would be the year 1996, which obviously didn't happen, and the second year being 2006. So it's almost as if these timelines all kind of merge and come together, and then humanity gets to the abyss, we get to the point of choice, we step back from the precipice, if you will, and go, oh, don't want to go there. But the problem seems to be that we pull back from it, but we just put a Band-Aid on the wound. We deal with the symptoms instead of the causes, and then these various causes begin to build up, and the time streams then come together again for the same set of circumstances for an action to occur at some future point.
I'm wanting for a grasp of understanding how the process works in finding these things in the Bible. Do you suggest to a computer, for example, let me understand.
Okay.
Do you suggest the word Israel or terrorist attack and then have the computer go through looking for these sequences that come up with those two keywords and then more? Is that the process that's used or what?
Well, it's based on an equidistant letter sequence. So the code itself,
yes,
when you put in, say, the word Israel or the word atomic.
Yes, let's assume it finds the word Israel every 82 letters.
Right. So every other letter that it spits out in 82 letters, let's say, and let's say it finds the word Israel comes out in 82 letters as I, and 82 letters as
yes,
S, and 82
yes,
letters as... So every letter that comes out, every 82nd letter...
Okay, but what I'm trying to understand, okay, you shot in the word Israel, and you found, okay, it comes up every 82. Do you then look at every 82 prior to and following that word to get the rest of the story, or what?
Yes, and then it spits out what appears to... Well, a group of words, and this is where the interpretive process comes in.
Yes.
It puts out a group of words, which are open to interpretation, of a sentence, of certain things happening, or shall we say, a sentence of things about Israel, for example,
yes,
or a specific name like Rainier or Washington D.C. or what have you.
Okay, I now understand the process. I think. Why do you suppose such information would be encoded in the Bible?
Well, in the first five books of the Bible, which are a bit unique from the rest of the Bible, you have a body of work that has been copied religiously. It's said if you change a jot, a tittle of the Torah, that you destroy the universe.
Yes.
The thing goes. So you have a body of work that for 5,000 years has been copied assiduously.
You are satisfied that that level of integrity really has been always true regarding translations.
I believe so, because there's also a mathematical sequence that you can plug in that actually makes sure that you're getting a proper translation, should I say, of the code itself.
So then, is the suggestion? Do you believe that God encoded this for us to find at some future time? That it was the Bible within the Bible that we were to look at, or that this is just some sort of cosmic message delivered through this weird way?
Well, I think in many cases there are, in the book of Daniel, for example, or with Elijah, it over and over and over again talks about books or knowledge that have been given to the prophets that should be sealed up until the end of days, and that in the end of days, that a great outpouring of knowledge would come to the people, and obviously that's happening with libraries and the internet and computers and whatever else, this great outpouring of knowledge would occur, and that these mysteries should be unsealed at this time. And here's the unique part about it, Art, is that when you're dealing with intuition or predictions or prophecy, the problem is the part of the brain, and I deal with this in the remote viewing classes that I teach and all the remote viewing that I do. The brain, which is the superior anterior section of the brain, which is sort of the back right section of the brain, the part of the brain that predicts future events does not exist or live in linear time as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
You have the male side of the brain, which is the left side of the brain, is numbers and measurement, and it measures height, width, breadth, space, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
It judges things. It's I guess what we call the masculine lower mind.
Right.
The right side of the brain, the feminine section of the brain, can't can't add two and two together, doesn't understand the concepts of up, down, right, left, and center. It thinks in terms of symbols and archetypes. It's literally like the crazy lady in the purple muumuu running through the field, if you will.
Yeah.
So because it doesn't live in linear space or time, it doesn't see time as linear. And so many people have visions of future events and of these visions of future events, but it becomes almost impossible because that section of the brain that thinks in terms of emotions and symbols and archetypes and can see these things in the future does not really have a concept of linear time as we know it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So when you're trying to actually put a linear time frame to something, to an event that's going to occur in the future, the other side of the brain, which is the measurement side of the brain, thinks that what the other side of the brain is doing is impossible anyway.
All intuitives have a horrid time with timelines.
It's difficult.
It's the hardest.
So I think the unique thing, and this is why it's been such a revelation for me, is that I've taken all these predictions, going all the way back to 1994 as an example, and going back to 94, I said that right at the year, at the turning of the great age, 2000, 2001 to 2005, that we would see Islamic attacks on Washington, D.C. and New York City, and that these would be the first of a series of attacks, that you would also have, I predicted back in 1994 that sometime in the 2000s, well, I think it's still a little early, the 2005-2006 time frame, I saw something called a red mercury device being used on Washington, D.C.
All right, hold it right there, Sean. A lot of people will have great doubt that Sean called all of this, but he doesn't just claim it. It's actually documented in all of the old newsletters. So if you doubt what Sean Morton is saying to you, do a little research and go back to his old newsletters. It's there. It's all there. And so that's why we listen to prophets and intuitives like Sean David Morton, because a lot of the times they're right, frankly. We'll be right back.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It sure is. Sean David Morton is here, and we've got a lot of ground to cover. Stay right there. Once again, Sean David Morton, and so much going on, Sean. All right, in the middle of all this, a lot of people who listen to this program are very, very interested in the UFO phenomena. A lot of people feel the Earth changes may even be involved. You know, I had somebody send me a really interesting email the other day. They suggested that all the complex crop circles that have appeared in Great Britain, those that are not hoaxes, are perhaps predictors of what's about to happen there, weather-wise?
Interesting theory. I know that there's certain people that are decoding the circles, claiming to base it on geometrical designs, that they are in fact a language, if you will, a musical language. I think you're going to have a wave of crop circle phenomenon coming up this year that is going to be unprecedented.
And will that coincide with the UFO wave over major cities in Europe and Scotland?
Yes. And this is the great warning that I see. And this is all part and parcel of, and once again, taking it back to the Hopis and the Mayans and the
yes.
Egyptians. If you just take it down. First off, if you look at the Great Pyramid of Giza, in the pit of the Great Pyramid, the lip of the pit relates to, if you understand the time coding of the pyramid, the year from the end, September, October or so, because that's when the lunar year begins, that's when the Jewish New Year begins, Rosh Hashanah, the Feast of the Trumpets, from I think it's September 17th, I think, this year. From 2004 to 2005, there will be 1 year of warning, if you will. For those that are the enlightened, for those with the eyes to see and the ears to hear, to begin to prepare for what is going to happen between 2005 and approximately 2012. The first phase of what I'm calling, for lack of a better term, a seven-year tribulation period here in the United States and across the world. I also think that one of the major prophecies of Grandfather Thomas Banyaka and the Hopi were that they believed that we would see extraterrestrial visitors directly before these great things would occur. What they called Puana would return and give mankind some kind of warning, literally a day the Earth stood still.
How much weight do you give that?
If it was to happen, I mean, I'm not, you know.
Well,
once again, we had a 22-mile across UFO park itself over Phoenix, and nobody heard about it for like a year.
I know, but if it happened, then we can give it lots of weight. But right now, how much weight do you give it?
I think that the before periods of massive Earth changes, or should we say, I don't know what better way to put it, stress on the population, before major wars, before economic collapses, for whatever reason, these craft show up, whether or not it's before great battles in the days of the Roman Empire when they were considered flaming shields. It's almost as if they're jockeying to get a seat, if you will. I do think that there are extraterrestrial entities out there that have a stake in what happens to us here.
Best show in the galaxy about to get started?
Yeah, well, maybe that's why the skies are filling. Maybe we're their grandchildren. We're all getting ready to graduate, and you know, all the relatives are showing up trying to get a good seat at the graduation.
Yeah, and maybe they're like students watching an ant farm.
That's possible as well. I think that whatever's going to occur this year, specifically I believe it's going to start in Europe, over Scotland and France and England, you're going to have these waves of craft. Because there's been a lull in this kind of activity, at least from the beginning of about 2000 or so, that I think is going to start coming back with a vengeance. I'm not so sure there's been a lull as there's been, there have not been any programs, so to speak, that have been really reporting on any of this stuff since, the media starting to kind of clamp down on shows like Sightings or Strange Universe or Hard Copy that used to feature at least some of this stuff.
Yes.
Yours is the only program left, yours and Coast to Coast during the week that features this kind of phenomenon on a regular basis. And I think, you're going to see a return to this, and this will be linked, I believe, with record crop circle phenomenon as well. And I think you're going to see some very, very interesting revelations in regards to the crop circles. I think more and more people are going to come closer to possibly interpreting maybe what the crop circles mean. One way or another.
What do you think they mean?
I personally think they're a language. I think that I can only give you... I interviewed a very interesting individual, a guy who called himself Audrain. We actually have on the website, we've posted the newsletter, the interview we did called The Man Who Fell to Earth. He claims that they are Octurians, that there was that they're ninth dimensional energy beings of some kind, that they've taken an active stance in our history, that they're not afraid of any sort of karmic backlash, if you will. They believe that the Earth is a gentle flickering flame that may be about to go out. And these beings are stepping in to help us. And I think that there's been a... Just when I when I sit down and do my meditations and I psychically am sort of probing the time-space field, the only thing I can tell you is that as of the harmonic concordance on the 8th of November, there's a door that's opened, and there's a great deal of positive energy that's coming through this space in this doorway. And a small group of people across the world, in Egypt, in New York, Jody Sirota in New York, and Star Fuentes in Hawaii, and these people who had these huge gatherings of people to get together and meditate on the harmonic concordance on the 8th of November, I think have opened up this door of, it's like the last thing to escape from Pandora's box is hope. Hmm. And they've opened this doorway that now more and more people, as they see what's about ready to come politically, economic, socially, and ecologically, are going to start banding together and start widening this door of hope. And I think the circles themselves are meant to be viewed holographically and in three dimensions. And I think that just by seeing them, they imprint, I believe, a message on the DNA of the observer, opening sections of the brain and literally programming us with music and a language and information that I think is going to be used at a later date when we have this massive activation that I think is coming within the next by 2008 or so, an activation of what the Bible calls the 144,000 and the multitudes of multitudes dressed in white who followed them as the great leaders of this huge outpouring of spirit that is going to be the balance to all the dark forces that are happening on the planet. So remember, even though we seem to focus on the negative, it's all counterintention. The greater the negative is, the greater the positive that balances it out.
Then I guess we're going to get something really positive from SARS and the bird flu and that sort of thing.
Well, unfortunately, I see that as, I told you there were going to be two wars taking place, that the people in power, for lack of a better term, the dark lords, their two concerns have been controlling two power blocks economically, Islam and China, and mostly Asia. And this fall, you are going to see round two of SARS, and you are going to see an Asian flu, a plague, which will simply shut down a number of countries that will simply close their borders by September, October, November, by the end of this year. I think that for whatever reason, these diseases are somehow being released. I think that there is a malevolent intelligence behind it. If I say that these are being used as a weapon to control the Asiatic populations,
man-made viruses.
That these are DNA sequenced weapons, actually, that are designed to kill only certain races of people.
They appear in some cases to be jumping from other species to humans. You don't think they're making that jump, shall we say, naturally? That is what you're saying.
I'll reserve an opinion on that. I'm saying that you're seeing, on the one hand, they're eating dogs and cats and, you know, a lot of animals that they should not be eating in Asia.
But that's been occurring for hundreds of thousands of years. Yes.
I'm saying that this is the kind of stuff that if you look at what's been happening politically in England also with people like David Kelly over there, who supposedly committed suicide and a group of scientists that have disappeared, every single one of these five scientists who either disappeared or committed suicide or been killed mysteriously were all working on DNA gene sequencing as a weapon. And I ran my newsletter in November, I ran an article that was by this man who claimed to be an insider in a lot of these secret government conspiracies and the interview was from 1997, where he said specifically, we're going to have a series of wars with Islam first to control the Islamic power blocks, and then these people are planning on releasing a series of diseases into the Asian populations to control the Asian population, the Asian economy, and these will be DNA gene-specific viruses that will only kill very specific groups of people, literally races of people, if you will, that are all holdovers from the old experiments, the Project 721 experiments, where Truman was trying to come up with a bomb that would only kill Japanese, for example, rather if the atom bomb failed. So phase two is going to be SARS part two. That is going to affect most of the Asian community and affect Canada and Australia because of their very heavy Asian populations. Once again, I do not think that this is going to affect the United States that greatly, simply because I believe we have better health care. I think we have more awareness of this. But this is going to be, again, those who are interested in health, those who understand herbology, those who understand the energetics of medicine as well, this is going to be part of the great division of people who are going to go along with, say, orthodox medicine, and those who are going to be more interested in using unorthodox medicine, shall we say.
Well, Sean, I've been seeing some interesting stories suggesting that SARS and the bird flu have perhaps mutated, and they've become, what's the right word? They've become able to utilize man as a more efficient host.
Yeah, they jump species.
Right, yes, exactly. Yes, but then there's been a mutation since last year's variety in China.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that might suggest what you're saying could be true, that somebody made a shot and now they're going to take another shot. I mean, it could work either way. It could be natural, I suppose, or it could be the hand of man.
Yep, that's what I believe. And my mother, you know, is a very famous author on this topic. She's my mother, Maureen Kennedy Salomon. She's the she's written Foods That Heal and Nutrition the Cancer Answer, and she was president of the National Health Federation for some 25 years and ran for vice president of the United States back in 1984 on the Populist Party ticket. So, you know, we've been at the cutting edge of this. My stepfather had alternative cancer clinics down in Mexico. So we've been on the cutting edge of this, knowing people like Robert Strecker and the Strecker Memorandum and where AIDS came from and him tracking this down for insurance companies and watching the genetic engineering out of places like Fort Detrick from the bioweapons warfare labs, jumping green monkey T cells and bovine AIDS, if you will, into the human species. So this is not something that is brand new, that hasn't been happening for the last 30 years. What I'm saying is that I believe that a political agenda is being accomplished with a series of biological plagues that are being released specifically against the Asian populations in China and the Far East, and that those are going to then spill over one way or another.
And who is doing this?
Once again, a group of, we could say, you know, if we knew, they wouldn't be a very good secret organization if we knew who they were. This individual who I ran the interview on, he said that the group called themselves the Incunabula, which is a very odd name, but it actually means, it's a Latin term which means nest of serpents or serpent's eggs or clutch of serpent's eggs, if you will.
Right.
And he said these are very powerful men who don't really exist in society, who are thinking, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ahead, on a timeline, who have access to virtually unlimited wealth and power, and that, you know, looking at this once again from a political scientific point of view, looking at the long-range things that they wish to accomplish, once again, by 2025, 2030 or so, as opposed to short-term goals of various governments and politicians. You know, that's the best explanation I can give you without going into, you know, the Illuminati or secret government.
Yeah,
or,
yeah. I wonder if I'm happy or upset that they exist and that they're doing this. They think they're doing it for the betterment of mankind, that these populations must be reduced.
About mankind, the betterment of them, I think, or their grip on the
yes.
control of the planet, I think.
Yes.
And they would, for example, I mean, they would happily, you know, kill a third of the population if it meant them losing control through anything, through alternative medicine or alternative energy or, you know, any of the things that would empower us. Once again, it's all about the choke points of energy, information, controlling energy, information, and food, basically, those choke points, and keeping their foot on that,
you believe
that line of
firm,
supply.
You believe firmly that such a group exists?
I do, yes. And I think that it's, and I think that they, if you understand that it's sort of a, on a more cosmic scale, we fight not against flesh and blood, but against princes and principalities, not of this world, literally, that you could call them demonic, you could call them that maybe the children of light and the children of darkness are fighting some greater cosmic battle that stretches down through time, if you will. So, you know, taking the higher view, looking at it from the top down, these are forces on the planet that have existed since man has been here. And I think it's just now coming to a culmination point where as we enter the new paradigm shift and the age of Aquarius and the next step of where humanity is going to be, I ultimately think the good guys win. I know they do. Because I've seen and I understand enough of the prophecy and I understand enough of what I've seen to see how the world turns out. But this is going to be the last great, the tail of the dragon, if you will, flailing across the world as we know it. So
I'm not sure if I believe such an organization exists, but I believe that it, I guess it could. I've wondered about this all of my life, Sean, whether there really was such an ultimate control out there, a powerful control beyond all government, shaping what all governments do, literally running the world.
Well, when I ran the article about the Incunabul, and I ran the interview with this doctor who claims he was part of this organization.
Yes.
I mean, the interview was from 1997, and everything that he said in the interview, and I actually said, I prefaced it by saying, look, win, lose, or draw, whether or not you believe what this guy has to say or not, if you look at when the interview was actually made, back in 1997, everything this man has said has basically come to pass from a political science angle or standpoint. Therefore,
what has happened to this man?
He's supposedly living in New York. He's underground, and he was on the run from one of these sort of super secret scientific organizations that was directly connected to the National Security Agency. And
it could be. You were that impressed with the interview. I mean, you really thought he could have been on the level.
Yeah. Well, because when you read the entire story, there are just things that he knew about. I got in a lot of trouble, actually, because...
But wouldn't their efficiency, if they're really what he thought they were, have him dead long ago? If they, you know, if he really had been violating the tenets of the runners of the world, come on, he'd be...
That's what you would think, but...
Yes.
He's a pretty smart guy, and I think that he's, on the one hand, I think he's managed to escape them. I think he's managed to successfully run himself into ground, and you would think that they would be all powerful, but by his own admission, he says these people are not all powerful. They're just as flawed as anybody else. You know, and they have their own agendas that they deal with. But, should he be dead? Who knows? I think he's done well enough, and he's smart enough, and he knows enough about the inner workings of what's going on that he's managed to successfully go to ground.
On the other hand, maybe an organization of that sort would simply be best by making no comment and doing nothing, because the whole story sounds ludicrous on the face of it, and so people just brush it off.
Yeah, who would, you know, I think his exact quote was, you know, who would believe me anyway? I did some research into a company that he mentioned.
Well, why did you believe him? I mean, there are people with delusions and paranoia that feel exactly the kind of thing you're talking about this man claims he felt.
Once again, there were companies that he mentioned that I researched that turned out to be everything that I could get my hands on, that I could actually research, that had some sort of basis in hard concrete fact.
Yes.
That turned out to be absolutely 100% true, including my making a huge amount of money off a company that he mentioned down in San Diego that was in the process of downloading a huge amount of technology that they were working on at places like Area 51, as an example.
That's very convincing.
Into the mainstream. And, you know, I called these guys and got a prospectus on the company. I mentioned them on your show and got in all kinds of trouble from the company for mentioning them on the program.
Yeah.
And their lawyers wrote me a letter saying, how dare you mention us on this program? How did you get this information about us? I said, well, I called you on the phone and I talked to your public relations director and she sent me a prospectus.
Well, you're still alive. So yeah.
Well, because I'm nuts. Remember, Art? I'm just crazy.
Yes, well, that's how they'll paint you. That's exactly how they'll paint you. Or me too, but that's, you know, been life for a long time. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. Stay right where you are.
Out on the street, I was talking to a man. He said so much, but there's nothing Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Phaedra and how she gave me life and how she made.
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Sean and I share a mutual friend, Dr. Zahi Awas, very highly placed official in Egypt. And Sean, I believe, just got finished getting some remarkable announcements and admissions from Dr. Zahi Awas. Some unbelievable stuff. That's what's coming up in a moment. Okay, Sean. I want to get to the phone lines this hour. That's the usual promise with a guest like yourself. But you and I both are friends with Dr. Hawass, who's got to be the character of the century over there in Egypt.
He and recently, the greatest living archaeologist. So.
Well, and the greatest living lot of things, actually. Mm-hmm. He's quite a guy. Anyway, you received some information from Dr. Hawass, or he made some admissions, or what's the deal? This is an exclusive, you said, for this program, right?
This is exclusive, because I don't think he's said this anywhere else. It's been a good year for me as far as TV and film goes. Last spring, I wrote and directed my first feature film. It's a little comedy murder mystery whodunit called Joe Killionaire. And I sold two documentaries, actually a documentary series called Challengers of the Unknown. And episodes one is called The Prophecy of the Pyramid. And we shot in Egypt for, I actually led a tour to Egypt with a fabulous group of people. We had 25 people on the tour from the first part of November. The last part of November, we shot on the Giza Plateau inside the Great Pyramid at Cairo Video Film at some studios there as well. First major documentary, really, that goes into a prophetic timeline or code of the pyramid itself. As part of this, we had about an hour interview with Zahi Hawass, and just very, very quickly, here were some of the fascinating things he said. Number one, it was always believed that the pyramid is built out of approximately 2.5 million blocks, and metaphysicians have said for many, many years, or those who believe in alternative archaeology, if you will, that there has been an older structure underneath the Great Pyramid, and that when Pharaoh Khufu came along, that he actually was rebuilding an older structure. Well, for the first time, Zahi Hawass has actually now admitted that there is, in fact, an older structure underneath the Great Pyramid of Giza.
Really?
Yes.
Really? Yep. Now, how did he come to this?
He was saying that that the Great Pyramid, the outer section of the pyramid itself, is not 2.5 million blocks, but is only 1.5 million blocks, because he claims that they've discovered either a stone superstructure of some kind, in other words, something solid, or some kind of hill, if you will, or some older structure underneath the pyramid itself, which just blew me away. I thought
that is
my mouth
quite remarkable.
Wide open
for Zahi.
That
sure.
He's now saying that it only took 1.5 million blocks because there's apparently some, as I said, some kind of stone superstructure of some kind or something underneath the pyramid. That's the first thing.
Okay.
Second thing he admitted to, which I thought was interesting, is he announced that they will be announcing a brand new excavation inside the Great Pyramid beginning in 2005, and that they found another shaft of some kind directly off the Queen's Chamber, and that this is very, very unusual, that this second expedition, or this expedition in 2005, or this excavation, should I say, mm-hmm. that's going to take place on this new shaft or well that they've discovered off the Queen's Chamber, is going to be looking for the true burial chamber of Pharaoh Khufu.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, what's the King's Chamber for? So he's in essence now saying that the King's Chamber was not the burial chamber of
right.
Pharaoh Khufu,
right.
but that his opinion is he's buried somewhere else in the pyramid. So, of course, that then belabored the question of, well, then what the heck are all these other chambers for?
Where did Zahi get all this religion? Where did this come from?
I have no idea. As I said, you know, Zahi and I have known each other for years. We went on the boat cruise for your Mystery of the Sphinx tour?
Sure.
And I was just in utter shock that, well, they're saying that number one, this is another interesting admission. Number one, that it was not 200,000 guys that built the pyramid, but 20,000 that showed up seasonally, with the rains. That was kind of weird.
This is totally weird.
Number two, and this is him and Mark Lariner, that are also from the University of Chicago, they're saying this. Number two, that Pharaoh Khufu did not reign for 23 years, but they discovered that he reigned for 36 years, as if like that extra 13 years, he could do it in, 36, not 23, so that he had a longer reign than they expected, that it took less blocks to build because there's something else underneath the pyramid itself, and that they are supposedly looking for, the big exclusive announcement is they are looking for the burial chamber of Pharaoh Khufu somewhere inside the pyramid. We're looking for something else, other chambers in the pyramid itself, which they're going to do there. Also,
so that people understand who Zahi is, tell them who he is.
Dr. Zahi Awas is the he used to be the director of the Giza Plateau. He started out originally as a guard there, actually, for years and years,
and then
he
became now, director.
He is now the director of the Supreme Council of Antiquities, which is an executive position appointed by President Mubarak in Egypt. So he is now the supreme director of all the antiquities and all of the ancient sites in all of Egypt. So he's the big guy, the grand poobah. We also met with John Anthony West while I was there as well. We interviewed him, and John Anthony West is putting together an expedition to do a sounding and what he believes will be a final time coding or dating, not only on the Sphinx itself, which, of course, Anthony West believes is 12,500 years old or so, but also a sounding around the Giza Plateau that will show them what's beneath the Sphinx itself. So outside of that, hopefully Prophecy of the Pyramids, which is the documentary I wrote and hosted, will hopefully be on, some TV station coming up this fall. So.
What can you imagine that Zahi has discovered that would so change what he believes?
He still believes that it was built 5,000 years ago, that, but I don't know. I mean, I was just, I thought I was going to have to fight him on all kinds of points, and, and he says, the metaphysical group has said not only did Khufu possibly, with 20,000 guys over the course of 36-some years, or however many people he had, that it was a huge reclamation project, that it was a redecoration of an already existing structure, that they placed sort of a limestone casing on it, that they dug up the sand, that they rejuvenated the Sphinx, that they did, and this is what took the 36 years of his reign to reconstruct things. And that there has been a pyramid in that location for not just 10,000 years, but possibly going back, possibly even hundreds of thousands of years. And, of course, his admission now that it took less blocks to build the pyramid because there's something, in fact, a larger structure of some kind underneath it. So, and I thought the excavation for the Pharaoh's tomb was another admission that the King's Chamber was never actually used as a burial chamber. Once again, metaphysicians have said that the pyramid itself has always been a temple of initiation.
Zahi is a very sneaky individual. And it's entirely possible that there's a great deal of excavation and discovery being made there right now and in the recent past years that Zahi has not said one word about, right? Would you put that past Zahi?
I'm not sure. I can't say that for sure. I mean, I can't tell you that even though we in the metaphysical community may disagree with him, he is still the greatest living archaeologist, period, and has discovered more in the tenure that he's been there, from the tombs of the golden mummies to the tomb of Osiris underneath the Sphinx Temple complex. I mean,
he's a real rough, tough, the real McCoy.
Yeah.
Zahi is the real McCoy,
and
all right.
Indiana Jones to shame. And,
but he's sneaky.
Yeah. Can I mention the newsletter before we take some calls?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, all right, real quick, we've tried to simplify everything. We've done so much work. We've completely revamped the website. We put some great things up there. It's the Super Bowl weekend, so we're going to give a Super Bowl special. The usual price of the Delphi Associates newsletter, the newsletter you have to have today because it tells you all about tomorrow, is $60 for 12 issues. It is a 16-page full-color magazine. We take no outside advertising. We don't sell anybody's names to mailing lists or numbers. The only number you need to have is 888-452-7999. That's 888-452-7999. 452-7999. The Super Bowl special, which will only last until, well, actually until Monday, is $50, so we're giving $10 off this weekend.
No problem, folks. Remember, spend like there's no tomorrow.
And also we have an e-version of the newsletter as well for $35 a year, so you don't have to wait for printing or mailing or whatever else. As soon as it's done, you'll get it delivered right to you. That's $35 a year. Also, we're now taking pre-orders for something that people have been begging me to do forever, a spiritual remote viewing guided meditation CD. And all this new stuff on the website. We've got Bible Coast slides up there, a whole list of new exclusive slides from Joseph Noah, a table of contents listing all 10 years of the newsletter. We have a CD-ROM called All Our Yesterdays, so you can see every newsletter for the last 10 years in print right there, and you can look back.
Yes, and people would like to research Sean David. There you have it.
And it's also, we've archived a dozen newsletters or so. The one about that was after the 9/11 attacks that showed all my predictions about what was going to happen in New York. So there's about a dozen newsletters there: the Armageddon Shuffle, the Prophet's Perspective, the interview with Audrain, the man who fell to Earth, the mysterious Victor out of Area 51. So you can download and actually the first newsletter from March of 1993. So there you go. It's 888-452-7999. The Super Bowl special, $10 off, up until Monday only. $50, and the e-newsletter for $35 a year. So if you're a computer geekosaur and want it delivered on your computer, there you go. So thank you very much. Now, my wife won't make me clean cat boxes for 2 weeks now.
All right, good. All right. First time caller line, you are on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I can barely hear you, dear. You're going to have to scream at us.
Okay. I was calling. I have great interest in the earth changes that I heard him speak about. I have received prophecies for several years myself, and the recent prophecy that I had in 1999 showed a vision of the earth, and it had changed, similar to a drawing that I subsequently found thereafter in a book about the harp written by Mr. Begich, who you've had on your show.
Yes.
It showed the equator snaking in this vision that I saw, so much so the top part of the earth became totally white, the bottom part of the earth became totally black, crisp, so that nobody could live on either the top or the bottom. But that in the vision that I was shown, along the equating snake-like thing that we had in the future, that's where people tried to find some type of refuge from the changes that came upon the earth.
All right, well, that's very much like what Sean was saying. Sean, you were saying that, and actually so was Whitley, that people would seek the southern latitudes, the earth would change enough that people would begin to squeeze into lands that right now aren't used for much of anything else.
Well, just like the ancients did, actually, everything was within about a 20 degree band of the equator. Remember, if we're going through a global warming phase, usually what happens is that as the planet gets warmer, mm-hmm. and you have ice caps melting, which will not flood the world, by the way, but what happens is the planet gets warmer, you then have increased liquid pressure on the land masses, which then leads to usually massive volcanic activity, which then dumps silicates into the atmosphere as a cooling mechanism, almost like the sweat glands or the pores of the earth, as a cooling mechanism that then dumps silicates into the atmosphere, which then reflects sunlight, which then leads us to a brief period of global warming, then followed by a glaciation period of global cooling. And we live right now in the sort of ecological midway point.
Sure.
Just within the last 12,000 years or so, in this perfected climate, if you will, where it's, you know, average temperature of the planet's between 50 and, you know, 60 degrees or so. It's a very rarefied, you know, piece of geologic history that we've managed to evolve into over the last 12,000 years or so, which seems to now be changing back to the Earth's natural state, which is much colder than we're used to today.
Well, one thing I do note is that prophets, intuitives, remote viewers, people who have prophecy by various means, or that lady with visions, or the Hopi, that, you know, they all do sort of generally agree on this precipice that we're sitting on right now.
Yes.
there is a sort of a general state of agreement. And while I don't subscribe to any one of these particular things, I do make note of trends because I do this talk show. And I talk to all of you people, all of you, and you all seem to agree on this, and that's a worrisome thing, I think. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, George, Art?
Yes.
Yes, I have some info first and a great question. What you guys were talking about earlier about the secret society, George was talking about that the other night, and one of them is called the Circle of Knights, just for your info.
Okay.
But my question was, have they applied, the people that use the deciphering technology for the Bible code, have any of them applied that to any of the books that were omitted from the Bible? I want to know if Sean knew anything about that.
If I heard him correctly, you mean to the apocryphal books in the Bible?
Exactly. Or
no, it only works with the first five books. All the other books are, the only thing it works with is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the stuff that Moses supposedly brought down, because, as I said, it's a unbroken string of Hebrew letters, very much like if you take the letters like, you know, Aleph is being one and Beth are being two. It looks like an unbroken string of numbers that would come out of a supercomputer.
I have not researched all this to have confidence in it. But, Sean, in the research you've done of the Bible code method being used on a scale of 0 to 100, with 100 being absolute confidence, how much confidence do you have in what's coming from this Bible decoding?
A lot of it has to do with who's doing it. I mean, I would put it up, you know, I would put it up at 80%.
Really?
Remember that there are people now that are taking it very, very seriously, including the Mossad, the CIA, the Pentagon. Most of the experts on the code, however, say that they only see the code as being good for the code giving us hindsight. In other words, after an event's happened, they put certain aspects of the event in, and they find things in the code because you have to know what you're looking for within the code. The advantage of what I'm trying to do with it is I've taken the predictions that I've been making since I started my newsletter in 93, going all the way back to things like the Vajra Chronicles in 94, all these things that I saw for this time frame, and then working with Joseph Noah, who's got like the best-selling book on the Bible code now, Future Prospects of the World, according to the Bible code, working with him, and he's able to take my newsletter and things I'm saying, put it into the code and see if there's any verification for what I'm saying, or, you know, if nothing comes out or it just says it's complete total nonsense, or if there's something that does verify it. And over and over and over again, not only are we getting verifications, but I think the most valuable part of this is that it seems to verify what we're looking for and at the same time give us dates, which seem to be pretty reasonable. And not only, for example, the Mount Rainier prophecy.
What about the people who say you can find anything in the Bible? I mean, I've been found. I've had people find me. And this radio program.
Well, you're in there. George Norrie's in there.
That's what I mean.
The attitude being that if you're written in the book of life, you know, you're somewhere in the code. And for hundreds of years, rabbis from every country have actually proved the veracity of the code by finding great rabbis and great spiritual men and finding them within the code. It's a mystery. It is really honestly a mystery. And for some of the greatest mathematical minds on the planet right now, working with this code and working with the supercomputers that they're doing it, and having intelligence communities now meeting with Drosnin and Rips, and
that is impressive, yes.
And them saying, because there's an entire body of evidence that says certain things are going to happen in regards to terrorist attacks on New York, Washington D.C., and Jerusalem, and names of people that might be responsible, and in fact, countries that might be responsible for funding these attacks. And I think that's going to be worked on. I mean, I'm convinced, for example, that Bush is going to win the election in the fall because he's gone through...
Yeah, a landslide, I believe you said.
Yeah, the danger phase. And he's all through the Bible code through 2005, 2006. So, I mean, he can't lose.
Gotcha. All right, stay there.
talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And Sean David Morton, and we'll do our best to race through as many calls with fast questions, hint for those of you on the line, and then fast answers, if we can do it from Sean, get through as much material as possible. Stay right there. Okay, Sean, Lonnie of Mill Valley, California, Fast Blast, question, and it's a good one. You told us that President Bush will win in a landslide, but you did not tell us who the Democrats will have as a candidate, and Lonnie would like to know.
I mean, the obvious wisdom is it's going to be Kerry. Looking at the astrological charts of all the candidates, Wesley Clark has the best astrological chart.
Really?
Kerry has the backing of virtually every single one of the pharmaceutical companies. I believe it's going to be Kerry. I also don't think the Democrats have really any intention of winning this election.
Opinion or prediction?
Opinion. This is my opinion. My opinion is it doesn't matter. Bush is going to crush whoever they put up against him. I try to look at results and outcomes, and so there you go. I mean, it doesn't matter. I will say Kerry, because I think Kerry probably has the least likelihood of actually winning against Bush. And
funny, the Democrats are saying he has the best chance, and that's why he's leading the pack. Anyway,
they're getting everything they want. My opinion is they're getting everything they want with Bush.
All right, east of the Rockies, your turn with Sean David Morton.
Yeah, I would like to ask you that if this society is really in decline and all these things are going to happen, then, you know, what should we do about it? I mean, I don't have a lot of money or anything. I mean, should I move to another country? Should I move to a different part of this country?
Yeah, that's a good, actually, overall, it's a good question.
No,
Sean, yes, but with certain specific predictions, like for Seattle, Sean?
Well, his question was, what should he do? Should he move?
Yeah.
To another country.
Yeah.
No, because it's going to be, I mean, even though things are going to get bad here in the United States, it's still going to be better than anywhere else. I think that we are going to be protected in many ways from the plagues. I think that the United States, we grow a huge amount of food, and we have the ability to get it to cities if there's any problems with shortages. I think we're best prepared in emergency capacity. And it's not going to be any better anywhere else. I mean, if people think that, oh, I'm going to move to Europe or New Zealand or whatever.
Bad move.
It's the United States is still going to be the safest country. I still believe that the U.S. is going to be a mother country of sorts, that we're going to take on many of the women and children from when all the great disasters and all these things are happening from the rest of the world. And I do think the United States is a very clear and very specific place in prophecy as being the second promised land, if you will. The land prepared in the wilderness that has a lot to do with...
Funny, because there are many who say the United States really almost has no place in prophecy.
I completely disagree, and that's where I...
You realize that school of thought exists.
Yeah, of course. It's all about Israel, and it's all about Europe, and it's all about the Middle East, and, you know, we're just kind of hanging out here to dry, so to speak, and I completely and utterly disagree with that school of thought. I think it's... has a great deal to do with the United States and the people of the United States and the freedom that we've brought to the world technologically, economically, and otherwise. And I think there's going to be a huge fight when those freedoms start being taken away and the Constitution is gutted. And after the next major series of attacks on New York and Washington, D.C., when attempts are going to be made to basically just trash the Constitution and set up a complete state of martial law. And I
What do you say to those people who fast blast, for example, here and say, look, if Sean's a prophet, then biblically prophets must always be right or they're not real.
Then my response is they should probably read the experiences of Jonah, for example. You know, one of the best of the best as far as prophets go. The last words of Moses, who over and over and over again say that a country can be saved by grace, by faith, by prayer, and that future events can be averted. The classic example was Jonah, who went to the city of Nineveh, preached for 3 days to the people of Nineveh, and then sat on a hill waiting for their destruction to occur. And because the people changed and did what he told them to do, the city of Nineveh was spared, and he was made the king of the city.
Believe me, I do put some stock in that. I really do, this mass consciousness thing. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello.
Hi, Sean. Good evening, Art.
Good evening, sir.
Richard here from Las Vegas,
hey.
Listening to you on Skip.
Hey, Richard.
Hi. My questions have to do with our basic nature. I believe that after looking at missiles and rockets and tracing it all the way back, it's come to me that it seems to me it's a question of real estate and food, and that the Darwin and the theory of survival of the fittest, along with our hunter-gatherer nature, has forced us into the position that you're talking about. And I think that you're right about that. What I do wonder, and I'd like your thought on, is that, and if Bush wins the election, and he and Cheney are both in trouble with the Supreme Court, and we end up with a Speaker of the House as president, what will then happen to the people of the country?
Okay, sure.
The whole last part of that question didn't make any sense about trouble with the Supreme Court, and there's no trouble. I mean, half the Supreme Court are all Bush or Reagan nominees, and I mean, if anything, he controls. I'm really not sure what the question was.
Well,
the truth.
I don't know. I guess he was anticipating a fight with the Supreme Court over some issue, bringing the president and the vice president down politically and putting the Speaker of the House there.
Not going to happen. I don't know. Okay,
you don't see any of that.
No, I don't see how that could. No. I mean, and I have predicted the impeachment of a president back in way, way back, if you remember, with Clinton.
Okay.
So, no, that's not, in no way, shape, or form is that going to happen. He owns the Supreme Court. If anything, by passing Patriot Act 1 and, of course, Phase 2 of the Patriot Act, which they passed over the weekend,
I believe the Supreme Court had some argument with some aspects of the Patriot Act, didn't it?
Not that I've seen so far. I mean, because nobody, as far as I've seen, nobody has actually brought a challenge to it, not even the ACLU.
Okay.
And Part 2 of the Patriot Act was put into place the weekend that they...
Maybe I'm just anticipating that.
Very quickly,
we got to stay with the lines.
Yeah, sure.
International Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton.
Hello.
Hello.
I was curious about what Sean might think of the prospect of a bridge that links Alaska to Siberia. There's a man by the name of Lee. I guess he's the foremost bridge builder, and he's just finalized plans after about 10, 15 years of planning on such a project.
All right, that's very interesting. Is there any way you can foresee whether there'll be a bridge from, that'd be something, wouldn't it, Alaska to Siberia?
I haven't, I haven't given it much thought. I usually try to focus on, usually get information about what I focus on. Although I see it as this is far in the future now, and hopefully a future that can be averted. I mean, I see that path through Alaska as an invasion route. With a last final war against Red China sometime around 2000, between 2000.
You really think there could still be that kind of a war, Sean, where the Chinese send massive hundreds and hundreds of millions even of soldiers traipsing across land masses after us? You really think that could happen?
I do, yeah.
And you don't think that Washington would use the ultimate weapons that they do have to totally just destroy such a crazy effort?
Well, they do. I mean, they 100 years from now, from the future I've seen, a big chunk of China is a huge smoke and hole in the ground still. But it comes to the point of where, with the expansion of the Chinese economy at 10% a year, which is what they have to do, and shortages of specifically food and water, I don't see any choice but one final conflict between the United States and China. That's why it's what Mao Zedong called the Long March.
Mm-hmm.
And everything from their Long March missile programs to everything with the codename Long March has been, if you read Mao Zedong's Little Red Book, has been the ultimate conquest of the United States as the overpowering political goal of the Communist Chinese. The only thing that can change that, hopefully, is a new spirituality in China, which is one of the reasons why they're so afraid of the everything from Falun Gong to Christian missionaries to, remember, every major revolt that's occurred in China has been a religious and or spiritual revolt, like the Boxer Rebellion as an example. So unless there is a massive spiritual outpouring in China, the last great conflict will be between the United States with these wonder weapons, if you will, and China that has nothing but unlimited manpower. And when you also have a population that practices gynocide on a fairly regular basis, you now have between 60 and 80 million more men in the population than they have women, you know, who have no choice really but to either go to other countries to get women or to join the military. So this is not something, you know, and this is one last thing, by the way, if you want to take biblical prophecy into effect of this, the final battle being between the kings of the East, who would think that in 90 A.D., John on the Isle of Patmos would see an army of 200 million from Asia, and that now Red China actually sports an army of 200 million men.
Can you put a timeline on that?
Yeah, it comes between, as I said, between 2015 and 2017. Hmm. Will be the last of the great wars, and that would be, I believe, the end of the man versus man phase of the of a tribulation period that lasts for approximately 40 years. Before the return of a great messianic figure sometime in the year between 2034 and 2040. And
all right.
That's one of the very clear time codes of the Great Pyramid.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I've been waiting so long to say this. First time caller, long time listener,
calling
out of Rochester, Minnesota.
Yes,
fabulous.
Sir.
AM 1340 KROC.
Uh-huh.
I just had a quick bit of information for you, Art, and then a quick question for your great guest, Sean.
Thank you.
Last week you had a guest call in about a mechanical dragonfly, and that's actually, if you look into just about 2 months ago, the CIA came out with, they announced they have a museum.
Yes.
And in that museum.
A mechanical dragonfly, let me guess.
Yeah, radio-controlled mechanical dragonfly made by a very famous watchmaker, and it was meant to be a bug.
All right. I knew there had to be, so there you are. I appreciate the information.
It had problems in the wind, so they just dropped the whole project. It was meant to land on a windowsill and listen into what's going on in the room.
I'm never going to look at bugs in the same way. You have a question, you have a question for Sean.
Yes. He stated that they're going to be excavating next to the Great Pyramid, and when I think of excavating, I think of, like, the Lost City, and they, you know, dig out all of the sand. I was wondering, like, what?
No. It's inside the pyramid.
Inside
the pyramid.
Oh, an expedition.
Yeah, an expedition where they are going to excavate a tunnel, a shaft that they found inside the pyramid,
mm-hmm.
adjacent to the Queen's Chamber in the Great Pyramid of Giza. And Hawass now claims that they are going to be searching in 2005 for what they believe will be the tomb of Pharaoh Khufu, who supposedly built the pyramid, or Cheops, as he was called in the Greek. And that they think that now his burial chamber might be actually somewhere inside the Great Pyramid.
But Zahi said again and again, if anything, this was not a burial chamber. Haven't you ever heard him scream that?
What, you mean of the King's Chamber, you mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Well, obviously he doesn't believe that now, and now he thinks that Khufu was buried somewhere, he claims. According to the interview, I never heard him say that, but according to the interview, he now claims that he thinks that they might find Khufu. But they're doing something in there beginning in 2005 that's going to be an expedition slash excavation of a new tunnel and or shaft that they discovered.
How could you not ask him how he came to these new beliefs?
Because we were sort of out in the middle of the desert with the film crew and we only had like 30 minutes with him. So, I just tried to keep him talking on camera as long as I could in asking him these various questions. So,
okay. All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton.
Hello, Mr. Morton.
Hey, how are you, sir?
This is Rick in Lexington, Kentucky.
Hey, Rick, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, sir. I'd like to talk to you about who controls our presidents. I'd like to throw two names at you, if I may.
I would rather you not throw names.
You're talking about who controls the president?
Yeah.
These are names that you have thrown over the air for years, Mr. Bell.
East of the Rockies, call toll-free 1-800-825-5033.
Yeah, okay, well, all right, we're back to that again, Sean. I've never been one to grasp these grand Illuminati-type scenarios. I still don't know that I do. I listen to them, and I can sort of imagine them, but I don't know if I believe them.
Well, I don't think the real power lies with government at all. I mean, I think I do think that there is a mother corporation, if you will, of which governments like the United States or France or Germany or Britain or whatever are franchises of a much larger corporate military-industrial, you know, slash political capitalistic economic complex.
That's incredible. I mean, that governments are nothing but franchises of corporations that have various interests.
Yes. And I think that they basically set things up to,
wow.
You know, like Jack in the Box versus McDonald's or, you know, Pizza Hut versus Shakey's or what have you, that you have various franchises competing for various market shares, which is, I think is what it's boiled down to.
Well, that's what capitalism is. But the question is it really, you know, at the top, just, you know, pulling the puppet strings on our government? I don't know if I believe that.
Well, the real power is not as transient as voted governments that come and go. It's the real power is at places where, you know, people who run places like Area 51 or the Dulce Mesa or, you know, top secret technology programs, you know, the people the set standard bureaucracy, if you will, that doesn't come or go. That is not elected. I mean, the President of the United States can't visit Area 51, as an example, because he doesn't have a clearance. Well, who does? So it just gives you, you know, idea of the hierarchies that are involved with publicly elected officials that come and go, as opposed to an established complex of power that stays in power with a continuity of power over a long period of time.
Well, secrecy is the coin of the realm for the government, right?
Well, and especially this government, yes.
Well, probably all governments. Sean? Well, that's an abrupt way to... Sean, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. It's just... Excuse me. I don't know what happened to the phone line.
Wow. I thought I lost you, and I was about to say it was an abrupt way to end an interview because it's almost over.
No, I'm sorry.
It would have been a terrible way to end.
I'm sorry.
All right. Anything that we did not cover tonight that should be made public?
Yeah, just real quick. Let me just ramble here for just a couple of seconds. All right. We went through... A very interesting thing is happening between May 17th and June 29th. I think a lot of people want to take a look at. You've got Venus going retrograde in Gemini. And I spoke to some Hindu Vedic astrologers today who say that this is a very rare thing that they said doesn't happen. I don't know if this is right or not, but they said something about it's the first time it's happened in like 6,000 years. Venus retrograde going directly across Osiris, and they specifically watch for discoveries to come out of Egypt. Watch for major revelations in the Middle East, coming out with a lot of ancient technology and ancient archaeology. Got that. We talked about the stock market Olympics. Very interesting. There's going to be more security than ever in history around the Olympics in Greece this year. It's going to be more like an armed camp than a sporting event. Boats, planes, tanks, troops. But I still, when I meditate on it, I see problems possibly revolving around the security itself. And I see some kind of riot or some kind of unrest at the Olympics that seems to be triggered by security forces, almost like a police riot, if you will, attacking a crowd. So
Right. Watch
for problems at the Olympics this year. Bush is going to crush his opposition. I already said that. The danger period for Bush is over, and I've talked about this quite a great deal. And I met with the Secret Service.
I wouldn't let you talk much about that
right. When
I had you on.
So The danger period for him is done and gone. I informed the Secret Service. I gave, and they increased the security over a period of time. So now the danger period is gone up until about 2006 or so. And the reason, as I said, I know he'll be elected is because he's all through stuff we're studying in the Bible Code that includes him coming up with a peace plan for the Middle East that involves Sharon and Arafat signing a peace treaty by 2005, directly dealing with the Israelis and Palestinians more even-handedly after the election. Talked about the warning for Seattle, a series of deep underground quakes in the mid 6.0 range. Watch a triangle of land and watch specifically Mount Adams and Mount Baker as precursors to any effect in regarding Mount Rainier.
But for the peace of mind of the Northwest people, there will be warnings, plenty of warnings, if this does occur. Correct, Sean?
Yes, yeah, and I see evacuations before this happens, and I just hope people listen to them because we're looking at 2005 as being a drop-dead date for this to occur.
Drop dead date.
Talk about the...
We can't talk anymore. We're done.
That's it.
It's over. Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much. It's been just I really missed you. And it's just been a joy, and I'm glad you're happy, and I'm glad you're doing what you love, and God bless you, man.
Thanks for being here. Good night.
All right, bye-bye.
Deep. Coming up on 2 a.m. here on the West Coast. It's racing tortoise. Listen, everybody, that's it for tonight. Thank you. Tomorrow night we're going to talk about space and the space program and where we're going or not going. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. Ciao.